With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
You are listening to Any Given Sunday, a part of the Dead End Podcast Network. Please subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, and all other podcasting services. Please make sure you check out Dead End Hip Hop, Dead End Sports, Dead End Gaming, Is the Mic Still On, Chris Platt's Strictly Hip Hop and Hoops Talk, and a host of other shows on our podcast network. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. You are listening to Any Given Sunday for Sunday, July 25th, 2021. I am your host, Manny Brown, joined as always by my co-host, Josh Rodriguez. Josh, what is up?
Manny, how are you? I am in Newark, New Jersey, because I was supposed to fly out to
Miami. On assignment, man.
And what happened was my engine, well, not my engine, the plane's engine just wasn't working. Boarded the plane, got off the plane, reboarded the plane, got off the plane, and now I'm flying tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock. It's going to be good times. Good times.
Listen, so many things. First and foremost, flying sucks. Second, we need to come up with like a weekly graphic. Josh on assignment from where? Where's Josh this week? That's like the new segment on the show. Where's Josh this week? Is in LA? Is he in Alaska? Is he in Miami, New York? Who knows? On assignment.
After this Miami trip, I'll be in LA for a long time.
Nah, it's all good, man.
I think
I'm glad that whatever issue that was going on with the plane, they discovered it in time. Not like, you know, while you're in the air on some final destination shit.
Yeah, people were mad. And I'm like, yo, we didn't die. Like, what do you want?
Because it's the inconvenience of it. That's what it is. It's just the inconvenience of it. But when you actually like sit back and like actually think like, okay, I'm glad they found this out like while the plane was on the ground,
right?
Not in the air, over water. You know, I love my life. I don't want to end up on a final destination trailer. Like it's, you know, please. But how are things with you? How's life? How's been this week?
Things are good. It was a really short trip home. Saw my best friend who I haven't seen in about 2 years, which was cool because of the pandemic. It's crazy, man. I just hope that life gets back to normal, man. This Delta variant is just, I'm just so sick of this, man. And, you know, it is what it is and got to be careful. And hopefully, you know, these cases can go down and we can all be safe as a country. But I was just happy to see my friend because I was kidding with him. I was like, we haven't seen each other in 2 years, but like it might be another 2 years before we see the way this the cases are going up. So but
yeah, cool. the Delta variant is here. It is for real. I'm just honestly, like, I was going to talk about it on the show this week, but it's like, honestly, I'm just so
just
exhausted by COVID. It's just exhausting, right? Because it's like we're living it every day, you know, and the threat of possibly maybe going, I don't even want to think about it because it's just like, I'm just mentally exhausted. I'm not the only one, obviously. The whole world is mentally exhausted with COVID at this point. You know what I mean?
Like, yep.
I just hate the fetishization of it from the media in a sense, because it's like they put out these numbers like, oh, well, cases are going up and are at an alarming rate. Yeah, but we're also pretty much opened up as a country and people are going out.
So it's done. It's going to happen.
It's like add context to the reporting. Don't just put out there like, oh yeah, there's been a 300% spike in cases today.
People
are outside. It's summertime. Right. Like this was
back. There's no more mask mandate.
Right. Now you can critique the CDC's mandate on mask and their positioning, which we had a conversation on Dead End Sports this past week about the Delta variant and because we were just kind of piggybacking off the whole NFL thing. Jesus, the NFL. Did you see the two coaches that basically quit because they didn't want to take the COVID-19 vaccine?
Yep.
What a bunch of fucking pussies. Like literally, like in a sport that literally prides itself on manism, you know, the gridiron and all this right. other hoopla, right? This masculinity porn that the NFL fetishizes about. And like, oh yeah, you gotta take a vaccine. What? No, I'll quit. And I mean, I respect it in a way because it's like they believed very strongly in their position not to take the vaccine, that they were just willing to say, you know what, I don't need this job. I at least respect that. But it just, when you think about it, it's like, really, this is the message that you want to send? This is literally the message that the league you want to send? Oh my God. And then some these NFL players,
Cole Beasley. Yeah. Cole Beasley makes me laugh. I actually know, I don't know Cole Beasley, but I produced a podcast with Cole Beasley. I used to speak to him every week. And he's a character.
Are his views surprising per the personality, you know?
Kind of. I'm not going to lie. A little bit. I mean, he's very anti-establishment. I didn't know. But here's the thing. It's like, so this whole thing with the vaccine, like, I know the media tries to make it pretty political, but I do know some people who don't want to take the vaccine who are liberal or apolitical. Like, it's not just like deranged, like Trump's. It's like it's across the board.
Yeah.
So I don't think that it's like I you can predict, like, obviously, like, there's this famous, I want to say it's famous, but there's like this very popular graph going around that shows like the vaccinated states and them voting for Biden and the unvaccinated states and them voting for Trump. Like, there was a correlation there, but there's also like, it's not like as like with our politics today, like, you can tell like, oh, you're pro-choice, you're pro-life, you fall here. You Black Lives Matter, you Blue Lives Matter, you fall here on the spectrum. Yeah. With the vaccine, it's not all over the place. Like, it mostly falls on the right if you don't want to get the vaccine, but there are people who just don't want to take it, you know? And if Cole kind of reminds me of that, because Cole's not, from what I know of him, he's not really like MAGA conspiracy theorist. But the vaccine, for those people who don't want to take vaccines, like, that's an issue for them. Like, I don't want to put that shit in my body, despite no matter what data you throw at them, no matter what statistics you throw at them. Like, it's just the thought of it. It scares them. It legitimately scares them.
No, I get that. And when you say people, I mean, I live with a person, my wife. My wife is very anti-vaccines at this moment. You know, she had to take one, obviously, because she goes to law school and she begrudgingly took it, you know. But I guess that's the difference, right? It's like, and her reasoning is, you know, the history of vaccines and Black people, histories of vaccines in general. You know, and like the brevity in which we came up with this vaccine, right? That concerns a lot of people. My thing with the whole anti-vax thing is just the reasoning behind it. Like, if you have a valid reason or you have a valid concern, express that, and I can at least see where you're coming from. To just say, oh, well, I don't want to put that in my body. What? Vaccine. I'm anti-vaccines. I'm like, okay, well, you know the data. And look, people can get the vaccine if they want to or not. I'm not here to tell people what to do. I personally feel like people should get the vaccines. If you don't, that's fine. I just wish that people, especially people in high profile positions or public figures that have people that listen to them and follow them. And yes, it is Cole Beasley. This isn't, you know, Patrick Mahomes, but Cole Beasley is the best slot
receiver. He's the best slot receiver in the NFL, man. You didn't know that? He said that.
I know, right? I know.
He said that about himself. He was serious.
Go figure.
He has Emmanuel Sanders on his team, and he thinks he's the best slot receiver in the league.
Not even the best slot receiver on his team. But you know the world that we live in, right? You know, the celebrity culture that is this country, right? And people like Cole Beasley, for better or for worse, whether we like it or not, have power. They have a following for a reason, right? These people are celebrities and they're public figures. And I feel like you owe people at least an explanation, like, hey, you know, I'm not taking the vaccine because of this, that, and the other, and these reasons.
Well, yeah. And disagree
with them.
Right.
Whatever. But at least they give a reason.
Right. I think, you know, everyone should have the freedom of choice whether or not to take the vaccine. I don't think it should be forced. But I think what bothers me, and this comes from like a just a pure logical standpoint, is that when I see someone like Cole Beasley, like Derek Anderson talking about it, like the reasons that they're stating are just factually incorrect.
Facts. And
that's what bothers me.
That's the part that bothers me too.
Like, I can understand if someone's like, you know, I don't want to take the vaccine because like I you know, had a vaccine when I was early. Like, you know, I had a bad experience with vaccines, or you know, I know someone had a bad experience with vaccines, or like your wife, you know, the history of that. I understand that, you know? I'm with you. I would encourage someone to take a vaccine. If I was to meet someone, I would encourage that. But you know, there are legitimate reasons where it's like, okay, I can understand why someone is scared too and doesn't want to do so. But if you're going to come out and you're going to tout like false statistics, or if you're going to come out and say that it's not safe for the majority of Americans when it absolutely is, and when you're going to come out and say, you know, well, if you're vaccinated, you can spread it. Like, it's, I don't mind people not taking a vaccine. It's when you start spreading false information about it, because everyone has a right to, you know, you have a right to put whatever the fuck you want in your body. It's up to you. Yeah. Like, yeah. That's fine. If you don't take the vaccine, don't take the vaccine. That's fine.
Right.
My thing is just at least be honest with the reasoning, or don't like search for like false statistics or data that's not proven to justify it. Because then what you're doing is you're spreading basically fake news or false information. And for someone who would encourage people to get a vaccine, it's kind of frustrating, because it's like, all right, well, now you're scaring away people who, you know, have legitimate questions, and you're answering them incorrectly. You're going to fall on starvation. If you don't take the vaccine, that's cool. That's on you. If you don't want to put stuff in your body, that's on you. You know, that's fine. You have the right to do so. But don't lie and don't throw out stats that you don't understand about it. That's my only thing.
Right. And I'm with you 100%. And that just shows a lack of obviously awareness, and it shows ignorance, but it also just shows this lack of like privilege, right? Like, this is what bothers me about Americans in general, right? Like, it's like we're literally having this debate about whether people should get vaccines or not. We literally have countries across the world, because of the capitalistic practices of some of these drug companies, Pfizer, you know, there's a huge inability to reproduce the vaccines and distribute them on a worldwide scale. So you literally have countries that do not have enough doses, that can't get enough doses even if they tried. Right. And we as Americans, who are privileged enough to have easy access, or at least easier access than, you know, 99% of the countries across the world, right? We're literally having arguments. Oh, I just don't want to. I just don't want to. I don't.
That's the thing that bothers me. Like, that's what bothers me. That's the one that bothers me. It's the I don't want to, and it's like I said, it's the false information of like not knowing like how vaccines work. That's the
part. And you know what bothers me? It's like literally NFL players are going to lecture me on what to put in your body. Like, you literally get hit in a car crash every game for 16, 17 games. I mean, you literally are making the choice to get CTE every week, but you want to tell people not to get vaccines, or you want to basically preach that, you know, people shouldn't get vaccines. It's like, seriously? It's like, you know, I literally know people that do cocaine, but want to tell me they don't want to put that shit in their body. I'm like, really? You're going to not put a vaccine in your body?
But I would just recommend everybody.
Cocaine?
Yeah.
Like, that's an unpopular position, by the way. That's an unpopular. But I'm just like, I'm just like, it just doesn't make sense to me. It's just like, again, ideally in a world, we wouldn't have vaccines, right? But we have vaccines for a reason.
Right.
Like, just take the goddamn fucking shot.
Or just go to your doctor and ask questions. And if you still don't feel comfortable, don't take it. That's fine. Like, that's fine. But just like, be honest with your reasoning. That's my only thing. Like, don't come out here and make the vaccine seem like it's not safe, because it's 1000% safe. Like, the statistics show the deaths and everybody who's hospitalized right now, 99% of the people are unvaccinated. That's just a fact. Like, that's not, and the only way you dispute that is if you don't believe the CDC. Because then if you tell me you don't believe the CDC, then we can't have a conversation, because it's like, well, whatever numbers are, you're just not going to believe. But the data and everything that we have with the vaccine shows that it has been overwhelmingly safe for everybody who takes it. But if you still don't feel
comfortable, there are outliers. Sure, there are exceptions to the rule.
Yeah,
like anything with medicine, there's going to be outliers. I'm sure there's somebody out there that has taken fucking Pepto-Bismol that has died. It's anything, right? You could take anything, and there has a complication, or you have some sort of allergy.
There's a difference. But there's a difference between dying because of the vaccine and dying because the vaccine didn't work. There's two different things. Like, that's two separate things. People aren't dying because they got the vaccine. People who got the vaccine and may have passed away, which is a very, 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 very like minuscule percentage, are people who the vaccine just didn't work for them, the breakthrough cases. So it's different. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. So my thing for someone who would like to see more people get vaccinated, because I do think it will, you know, whatever this Delta variant is, I think it would, you know, stop it dead in its tracks. My thing would be like, if you want to take the vaccine, that's fine. But this information of like this, like, misinformation of it not being safe is just, there's no data to prove. Like, there's no argument on the other side of it not being safe. There's nothing you can show me that says, okay, this thing may not be safe, because it's overwhelmingly showing that the people who aren't vaccinated are more affected by the COVID virus than the people who are vaccinated. Like, it's not even like a debate at this point in my opinion, not even an opinion. Like, just, it's an objective fact. If you want to take the vaccine, that's fine. but don't lie mm-hmm. about the reasons why you don't want to take them. Maybe you had bad experiences yourself. Maybe your kids have had bad experiences. That's fine. That's cool. You know, I don't mind that reason. But don't go on Twitter if you're a public figure like Cole Beasley and just pop off of the mouth about like not trusting science. Like who the fuck are you? Are a football player? Like, and you're going against people who right. like did this shit for their whole lives. Who went to school for 10 years. Like, relax, right. man. Like, sometimes you got to appeal to authority.
I took earth science in 10th grade and I don't fucking trust that shit.
I'm not, and I don't want to shame nobody, bro. I don't appreciate people who shame people who are unvaccinated. I think that's fucking mean. I think we got to talk to people who don't want to get that. You cannot speak to people who are unvaccinated like they're fucking children, like they're idiots, because they're not idiots. A lot of people are scared and a lot of people are rightfully scared because of experiences that they might have had. And you have to understand that. You got to be empathetic. You got to be empathetic towards people, calling them idiots. Like, oh, don't you see them? Like, no, it's different for everybody. And at the end of the day, like, you are putting something in your body. Like, you know what I mean? And people mm-hmm. have a right to ask questions. People have a right to ask their doctor. People have a right to be skeptical about it. And that's okay. We can't treat people who don't want to get vaccinated like idiots. And that's the problem I have with my side of the argument, where it's like, I understand the frustration, but you also have to understand that these people who don't want to get vaccinated, they are people. You can't yeah. talk to them like that. And you have to respect decisions if they want to get vaccinated. So
yeah.
that's where I'm at. I think everyone should have a freedom of choice to get vaccinated or not vaccinated, but you know.
No, you're absolutely right.
Just be honest. And if you don't understand the information, just say it. It's okay. Like, it's not that serious.
And I think that's what it is. I think a lot of people are afraid to just say, like, I don't understand the information, or I don't understand everything, all the machinations that went through getting this virus or this shot and this, you know, whatever. And I think people are just afraid to admit that. But it's like, listen, admitting that you don't know something or you don't know enough about something doesn't make you less than or less of a person or anything. Like, it just makes you, to me, it makes you more smart and more down to earth and humble and honest with people that, yo, I don't know everything that there is to know, but you know, I'm going to do my research, or I'm going to, you know, talk to other like-minded individuals that that have the same issues that I have that maybe they don't understand. Let's all find information together. Instead, you're just going to get in this, you know, basically straw man, you know, all vaccines suck, or, you know, whatever. Like, it's just so stupid. It's dumb. I'm with you. It's 100%. And it's dangerous. It's dangerous because when you spread misinformation like that, when you spread just nonsense like that, or you not even spread, but you basically, you know, contribute to the spread of nonsense like that, you're hurting the overall cause, man. And I guess my issue is, it's like, you don't want to get the vaccine. That's fine. I don't care. Honestly, I really don't care. Like, if you want to get it, get it. If you don't, or if you want to take the vaccine, take the vaccine. If you don't, then don't. Fine. I don't care. Whatever your reasoning may be. For the folks that don't want to get the vaccine and don't care about science or are concerned, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, I don't want to get the vaccine, but, you know, I'm going to hit the club up next weekend and no mask. It's like, that's what bothers me. It's like, you can't have it both ways. Like, there is a pandemic going on, whether you want to admit that the severity of the virus or not, whether you want to get the vaccine or not, there is a pandemic going on. There's still people, quote unquote, getting infected.
Wear your mask.
Yeah. Don't have it both ways. That's my issue. That's my only issue with if you don't want to get vaccinated, great, fine. That is your right. But then don't come out here and potentially put people at risk, other unvaccinated folks or people that are vaccinated, and just put everybody at risk. And that's what's going on right now. Honestly, it's A, summertime. B, more restrictions have been lifted. There's no mask. People are out. People are doing stuff, rightfully so. We spent fucking a year locked in cages, basically. Like, people are going to go out. They're going to do stuff. And then you have this convergence of people who are vaccinated, people who are not vaccinated, people that may only have one shot, not two.
Right.
It's just a smorgasbord of infestation that it's just like, of course, right?
And no one's wearing a mask.
Right. And then, of course, look, I'm not preaching, you know, I'm not trying to preach here like I'm so great. I've gone out to public places now and I'm not wearing a mask. I'm not saying
I don't wear one. I'll be honest, I don't wear a mask.
I don't.
The only reason why I work in LA is because now it's mandated. But like, if it wasn't mandated indoors, I wouldn't be wearing a mask. I got vaccinated for a reason, because I wanted to live freely, you know?
Yes.
I got vaccinated.
Right. So. Yeah, it's frustrating, man. It's mentally draining and tiring, right? That we're still having this conversation, a year and some change into this, right? Like, that we're still having this.
We're still going to be having it for a while. It's not over. I think that's the frustrating part.
But the over-politicization of it, right? The fact of, like, if you're pro-vaccine, you're basically a lib and a snowflake.
But yeah, I don't believe that, though.
Don't believe in, but that's how the media portrays it in a lot of ways.
Right.
And that's where they contribute into a lot of the bullshit that goes on into this country, right? It's like they contribute into the nonsense that gets spewed out there and the shit that people consume and the identitarian politics that people kind of, you know, unwittingly participate in, right? It's like, you know, even by just saying like, hey, we're pro vaccines and everybody should go get them. You know, there's some idiot that'll come up in our chat and basically say, well, you know, you guys are libs and snowflakes and all that. And it's like, no, we're just concerned citizens that have an opinion that happens to differ from you. We're not judging anybody. All we're saying,
vaccine who are like concerned about it too. Like I know all my friends.
Everybody should.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's not necessarily
that, this is something that crosses political lines.
Yeah,
this is absolutely something that, you know, this should concern everybody.
Yeah.
Black, white, Hispanic, green, blue.
I just
Democrat,
don't know how,
Republican, conservative. It should concern everybody.
My only concern is that I don't know how, outside of, you know, vaccination, I don't know how we, like, how do you curb the virus again? Because obviously, you got to wear masks or you got to go down on lock. You got to, like, Florida, like the cases in Florida are ridiculous. I'm going to like COVID Central in the morning. Like the cases in Florida, like ridiculous. Like how do you flatten the curve again? You have to either A, lock up again, B, everyone has to wear masks, or C, like people have to get vaccinated. And
everybody has to get vaccinated. You have to have at least a 80% vaccination rate.
Right.
And
we're not even close to that, as a country though.
Yeah. And this is why you can't curve the virus.
That's why it leads to me to believe like this is just going to be around. This is just going to be, you and I will be getting vaccinations every year for COVID. That's what it's going to be like. And at some point, it's just going to have to be like, our government's just going to have to be like, all right, well, this is just something we're living with now, because there's no way in hell you make mandatory vaccinations for this. There's that would start a civil. I'm not even kidding. When it's like, that would be, You can't do that. You can't do that.
Yeah, no. And I don't think locking us down is another solution. I just don't think it's a solution. I really don't. I don't think you're going to be able to convince a bunch of Americans that, you know, basically have had a little taste of freedom. Oh, now you're going back from October to April. You're going back on lockdown. That's not going to fly. And it's not going to fly for a lot of reasons.
Right.
Key in point, we can't even fucking get people stimulus checks. We have a government that doesn't work. Right. You know, we have a government that doesn't work, that we cannot. We're just not in a position to take care of people in this country for a myriad of reasons. So, you know, people are saying it like, hold on. So I'm supposed to basically ruin my business or ruin my livelihood, give up my freedoms, and you're not even going to take care of me. You can't even provide me a check, a fucking check. It's like, what? No. Yeah, I don't think that you'll be able to put us on lockdown again. I really.
That's what I'm saying.
Really,
it's not going to happen. We're just gonna have to open up. Like, it's just, there's no other way around it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree.
No.
I completely agree with you. I don't think going into another lockdown or even just a pseudo smaller lockdown, it's not going to work. I think this virus is here. I think we have to admit, and I think we have to be honest with ourselves. Like, this is our lives. This is our new normal. Like, we're going to be fighting this shit until we're not. You know, there's an element of earned immunity. There's an element of, you know, getting folks vaccinated and just dealing with it. And I know that's unpopular, but I wish that the CDC and all the other government agencies were more honest and said that and said, look, guys, there is no defeating COVID. There just isn't.
Well, I think they were.
I mean, eventually there is defeating COVID, but I'm saying this isn't something where you just press a button. That's it. It's over. No, we have to continue to fight this, and we have to continue to. And by fighting it, I mean getting vaccinated and getting to a level where we're 80% vaccinated. And then eventually,
We're not going to get there. 80% of the country does not want to get vaccinated. And it's just the reality of the situation. 80% of the country does not want to get vaccinated. So what do we do from here? Like, that's, you have to come to terms with that. As a country, we have to come to terms. All right, we might get to 55 or 60%. And it is what it is. What do we do from here? Because there's no way in hell we're going to convince 80% of this country to get vaccinated. It's just not going to happen.
Okay. I agree with you, but I'm saying if we're not even going to get to an 80%, if we can't even agree that 55% of the country needs to get vaccinated, then this is, then come out and say, look, this is it, guys.
Audible. Call
just,
an Audible.
We're just this is our lives. This is our new normal. And that's the problem. We're afraid to just be real. And just be real about the situation, right? We want to paint it in a way that doesn't offend somebody. When you try to offend no one, you end up offending somebody. It always works that way. And I think that that's this country, the messaging from our government officials, CDC on down, whoever, it's White House, whoever, it needs to get a united front and it needs to have a united message and saying, look, if we don't get people vaccinated, this shit's going to stay here. And that's fine. That's if that's the choice of 45% of the country that they don't want to get vaccinated, then guess what? This is what it is.
We're going to have to live this way.
And we're going to have, people are still going to die. Your grandmas and granddads are going to die. People with underlying conditions are going to die. Like, and I hate to be that hyperbolic, but I mean, this is the truth. Like, it is what it is. Like, yeah. Like we're not, this is the facts here. Like, so it's frustrating, man. It really is frustrating. It really is frustrating.
We went off the rails there.
It's a good conversation to have, though, man. Yeah. Because again, it's COVID is one of those things that affects everything. It affects life, sports. Right. I mean, we're fucking dealing with an Olympic Games right now that I don't even know how the hell are they going to make it through the end with this shit because it's just being affected by COVID. Like it affects everything.
Like, yeah, and even things like healthcare, like the fact that we have so many people who are uninsured, like during a pandemic, is crazy. Businesses, small businesses, who can't afford to shut down without getting checks.
I have small children now. Now I'm concerned about sending my kids back to school with this Delta variant. Hopefully, not causing havoc in the fall and winter months. Like it's a lot of things that you have to think about. Yeah, it's a part of the conversation, man. So I'm sorry if you don't want to hear about COVID talk. Ideally, I can go a whole year without COVID.
This wasn't even on the agenda.
It wasn't. But I almost made it a part of the agenda, but,
Yeah.
But anyway, anytime I get a chance to kill the NFL, I'll gladly jump on that bandwagon. So, yeah.
What do you think of their announcement? What do you think of it?
Listen, I respect the NFL for coming out and saying it. The only issue I have with the NFL, Just like I told the folks that don't want to get vaccinated, I don't want to hear from the NFL that basically throwing their players under the bus, rightfully so, by the way, throwing their players under the bus saying, hey, we're going to have to forfeit games and stuff because you guys don't want to get vaccinated. That's fine if you're going to take that stance. But if the NFL cares so much about COVID, you know what? Tell these teams, and I know it's hard and it's easy for me to say because you're dealing with local municipalities and cities and states and whatever. I get that. But tell these cities, Tampa opening night. Hey, DeSantis. Yeah, I know you think Florida's open and all that. Right. Yeah, but Tampa's, Raymond James is not going to be at capacity. Hey, we're not going to tout that, fans are back in droves. Like you can't have it both ways. And that's
why they're going to want to have it back both ways.
The NFL likes to have their cake and eat it too. And it's like, that's the issue. You can't in one breath say, shame players that they don't want to get vaccinated. Oh my God, the shame.
And we're going to have COVID. Don't you know about COVID?
But then, Friday night or Friday morning, the day after the opening night football game at Raymond James, say, oh, yeah, you know what? 75,000. Yeah, right? Exactly. Right. 75,000. Oh, the NFL is stronger than ever. Yeah, like, nah.
You followed by Sunday night football in Dallas, Texas. Like,
Jesus Christ.
Followed by Monday night football in Kansas City, Missouri. Like, literally the three hotspots that COVID exists. That's true. That's a good point. They are trying to have the cake in you too. Like you're going to shame unvaccinated players, but at the same time, you're going to have hordes of people coming in to spread the virus. That's
hypocritical. That's my only issue. Again, it's typical NFL, right? Of course it is. But that's my thing. It's like, don't try to hack older than now NFL. And then on the other vein, you're basically, giving away tickets so you could pack these stadiums. Like, I just don't want to hear it. That's being fraudulent. Right. If you really care, don't have any fans in the stands.
Right. But it's all about the money. It's all about the money. That's what it is. Yeah, they want to make the money off the ticket sales, but they also want to make the money off of the advertising during the game. So these games better not get canceled, but we better sell out these games regardless of what COVID says. And it's on you guys. Absolutely. It's on you. Yeah, it's on you not to catch COVID. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd almost respect the NFL if they said, you know what, if these players don't want to get vaccinated, that's on them.
Yeah.
They don't got it us. We're still going to play the games. The games are going to be played.
Yeah. And just at the end of the day, man, like I I know a lot of, I wouldn't say a lot, but I know a significant amount of people in my family and friends and close people who don't want to get vaccinated. And just like, just to close it off, like I don't want to come across as like I said, I think it's very important that we don't shame people who don't want to get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. I wholeheartedly believe that the facts show that they're safe. But mm-hmm. I think if you are somebody like I who wants people to get vaccinated, you have to be empathetic to their point of view and to their concerns and just listen to them and, you know, give the best information you can at the time. And hopefully they make a decision that they will get vaccinated. And if they don't, it's their life. Let them live. But well, on top of that, you are 1000% correct. Our government has to start getting real with what's going on in this country and say, hey, we want to get in 55%. We got to call an audible here. What are we going to do?
And that's instead both like, parties. This isn't, you know, us being liberal or us being progressives jumping on, you know, this goes so beyond that.
I was actually talking about the Biden administration. I was directly talking to Biden's administration.
No, but you know, as soon as you bring that up, our government, oh, well, you guys are progressives. You guys are dunking on Republicans. No,
I was talking about Biden since he's president. So
last I checked.
Yeah,
last I checked. Biden, there may be a Trumper out there that still believes that, you know.
Right. Yeah, Biden's president.
Hidden votes in mud somewhere.
That's the administration I was talking about. Get real.
Yeah. So please do. Yeah. I'm sure we'll have this conversation again, begrudgingly, as we get more involved in the training camp and this starts to become do we even know if the Olympics are going to survive these next 3 weeks? Who the hell knows?
They'll push it through
because it's about the money, but you know,
yeah.
I mean the Olympics that you think of the NFL is bad. The Olympics don't give a fuck. The Olympics, they don't care. That IOC, they're the most crooked.
Get a devil.
Fucking, we're going to say
the devil.
Yeah, they're literally the devil. The
devil.
It's for real. IOC doesn't give a shit. No, they do not. They don't care. They will find replacement motherfuckers in the stands to take part in some of these teams if they have to. They don't give a shit.
Jimmy from Omaha, Nebraska.
For real, man. It's crazy, bro. You'll have the Republic of Congo winning gold medal in basketball for some bullshit because you know the US team is all fucking invested.
Oh my
they don't goodness. Give a shit. You guys complain about the Bucks not being worthy champions.
Right.
You know, when
Nigeria wins the whole damn thing.
Papua New Guinea wins the fucking gold medal. When they win the gold medal. Then come talk to me. Phoenix Suns, you have nothing on them. Papua New Guinea is your gold medalist. Oh,
my goodness.
Oh, my God. Oh,
what a disaster the USA team is, man.
Yeah, the USA team. Well, you know, it's like when you just fill a team with a bunch of superstars that don't necessarily complement each other as far as their games, and all you do is add three-point shooters and, like, no semblance of, like, slashers, no semblance of size.
There's not one person on that team whose first instinct is to create for others.
Nope.
One person, Draymond Green, but you can't run Team USA's offense around Draymond Green.
Yeah, he can't be the only one.
Yeah, he's the only one. There's nobody else. Nobody else. Everyone else's instincts is to shoot a three or ISO. That's it. That's my brief synopsis. Thank you.
That's literally it. Listen, we'll probably still win gold because we still have more talent than everybody else.
I don't know. But, I don't know. I don't think they're winning gold, man. I don't think they're winning gold.
That's bold. That's bold. Well, let's transition to someone who is winning gold.
Yes.
Giannis Antetokounmpo. I can never pronounce his last name. So I go by
you said it.
Giannis. Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks are your NBA champions for the 2020-2021 NBA
season. Shout out to you who called this. Shout out to you. Staying strong. Phoenix down. Listen. Phoenix up 2-0. Manny sticking to his guns, saying the Bucks were going to come back and win. I got to give it to you. Shout out to you. Well, congratulations. Well,
since you're showering me with praise here, you know, let's go back to what? Game one against Miami in the first round. You know, I
That's
said
true.
This Bucks team is different. You know, I said so. You know, look at my credit. Nah, man. Listen. Congratulations on the Bucks, man. First of all, I am excited. I almost feel like I'm a Bucks fan today for some reason. Like I am
You're proud of them.
I'm proud. I'm proud because it's good for the league. First and foremost, it's good. My dog is upset at somebody. He's probably chasing a damn
Suns fan.
Sorry,
your dog's a Suns fan.
Right. Nah, man, I think this is great for the league. I think it's a great story. I felt really good for that team last Tuesday night. I really did. That Bucks team has been through a lot over the last couple of years. They've taken up, they've had a lot of mud slung at their way. Rightfully so.
Yeah.
Fair. Rightfully so. But, you know, they did it when they had to do it, when they had to find whatever it that is buried deep in here and in other places, they found it, and give them credit. And I think it's so great for the league. And yes, I know if KD's foot was half an inch smaller or shorter, whatever, you know, would the Bucks be here? No, obviously the Nets most likely would be here. I know that if it wasn't for injuries, the Bucks probably wouldn't have gotten to this final and have obviously won. I know that. And you could say the same thing about Phoenix. But that being said, it is what it is. This is the finals that we got. And I it became so much of a talking point that I'm almost now the other way with it. Like, who cares? These things happen. Injuries
every
happen.
Year.
I'm a Laker
every
fan.
Year.
I'm a Laker
every
fan. Year. Yeah. It pains me to watch the Suns in the finals because I know right. deep down we had them beat and no one else in the West was going to beat us. But hey, it happens. It happens. Shoulda, woulda, coulda. Like, I get it. I can bring up chapter and verse teams that a bounce of the ball, an injury.
Every
you know,
everybody year.
Keeps saying if, you know, if every Robert Horry doesn't hit a three against the Kings, the Lakers right. don't go for a three-peat.
Right.
It happens. Like, right. you know, it happens. You know, if Karl Malone isn't trying to bang Vanessa in the locker room in 04, who knows? Maybe the Lakers in 04 get along enough to beat the Pistons. Who the fuck knows? Like, these are great NBA mysteries that we will never know, right?
Right.
Like, if half the Knicks roster in 97 doesn't step an inch off the fucking bench, nope. maybe they beat Miami.
People
and maybe
never
they...
talk about that year, ever. No one ever talks about the year with the Knicks. I don't want
that
to talk
was
about
their
it.
Best chance to be.
I don't want. I don't
that
want
really
to talk
was
about
their
it.
Best chance to be.
I don't want to talk about it.
Be that as it may,
I hate PJ Brown. I hate PJ Brown.
I hate David Stern, but that's another.
Yeah.
Another God bless his soul, though. Anyway, so nah, man, like these things happen. They happen all the time. Obviously, the Warriors. You know, you heard it a few years ago. Oh, if Kyrie doesn't get hurt in Game One of the Finals, do the Warriors ever even win that first championship? You could say that about every championship every year. It happens. It
right.
happens.
Right.
It happens. It's a part of the story. It's a part of the narrative for sure. I get it. It has to be said. But to act like this is the only year this has happened, or this is the only degree that this has ever happened. Look, injuries have impacted championship settings and sports events since the beginning of time, and they're going to continue to. It just is what it is, man. Let's talk about what the results are. Let's grade right. it on the results. And as far as the results go, the Bucks deserve a lot of credit, man, to be down 0-2 in a series, to be down by 9 in game 4 with your season on the balance, and to come back. They deserve a lot of credit, man. They really, really deserve a lot of credit. And it took guts, it took balls, it took whatever you want, whatever adjective you want to use, man. That's what it took for this team to come back, man. Anytime you're down 0-2 in any series is tough, but especially in the finals against a hot team like the Suns that have basically been, you know, on cruise control minus a couple games against the Clippers. You know, they basically yeah. were a buzzsaw. And to come back the way that they did and to have a historic performance by Giannis, how can you talk negative about the Bucks? And it's great for the league. You know, it's great for the league. You know, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the Bucks have been around for close to 60 years, a 50 year championship drought. They finally put an end to that. They do it the right way. The right way. They didn't go out and, you know, convince, you know, four other all-stars to join Giannis in Milwaukee. Like, they did it the right way. They drafted, they developed Giannis. They developed Middleton. Developed, keyword developed. They developed them. Giannis gets credit because he stayed. He stayed. He could have went somewhere else. Like he said in the postgame, he could have went somewhere else, but he didn't. He stayed. Even if you're the most cynical NBA fan, even if you're the most, I'm tired of the Bucks. How can you be mad at this? I don't understand it. And I'm not a Bucks fan. I'm a Lakers fan. So I have no dog in the fight. But how can you be mad at this result?
And then even the players that they acquired this year, like Jrue Holiday, is one of the most well-liked players in the league because he's just a great human being. And then PJ Tucker, who's been on contender after contender contributing and, you know, being a tough guy and an anchor for whatever mm-hmm. team he's on. I mean, that's a great story.
A hard worker, a guy that spent 5 years overseas.
Yeah. It's just they're just like, a very easy team to root for. I honestly haven't heard anyone really say anything negative about the Bucks in general. Usually the hate was toward Giannis, but even at the end of the series, I mean, even the people who were like, Giannis doesn't have a bag. I mean, from my perspective, at least, I know you were on a podcast that people were still saying that. But you got to give him credit. When you drop 50 in a closeout game in the NBA Finals, I mean, that's as all-time as it gets. I mean,
yeah, can we put an end to that bag shit?
Yeah, I don't care. Like, you don't need a bag. Like, if I can carry all my trees underneath my arm, I don't need a fucking bag. Like, that's really what it is. I don't care that he can't hit a step back from fucking 30 feet. He doesn't need to. He can literally stretch his arms out and dunk on you.
McCollum has bags for days.
Right.
Where's his championships?
Right.
James Harden.
Biggest bag. One of the biggest bags in the league, if not the biggest bag in the league.
Exactly. Where's his championship? Oh, wait, I think Houston just missed another three. I'm sorry.
Right. Like, they're still missing threes.
They're still missing threes as we speak. Right. 4 years later.
Toyota Center. You're still there. No, but it's true. It is what it is, man. I think we had this conversation before where it's like, it's not aesthetically pleasing. I mean, people watch basketball, you grow up and you watch Kobe Bryant, and he, not only is he dropping 40, but he looks good doing it. You know what I mean? Like, he's hitting difficult fadeaways. It's sexy. Like, he's more, it's just like, the prettiest
art. It's art.
It's and Giannis just isn't that. He's just fear of force and dominance. And a lot of people don't, and it's not even dominance from a Shaq perspective, right? Because Shaq was kind of art too. You get the ball in the post, it's like a shimmy, hook shot, or I'm dunking on. Giannis is just straight up a train just going through the lane. And it's not something that we're used to seeing. And I think a lot of people just had a problem giving him credit, especially because the past 2 years, you know, teams formed a wall and stopped him. So it just kind of made it seem like all his like MVPs were phony. But shout out to him, you know, for working hard and for not settling for threes and these like 18 footers, and, you know, for being determined to get to the hoop and realizing that he is a freak of nature and that he has that to his advantage. He's a likable guy. He's a good guy. He does nothing but respect everyone around him. He doesn't talk crap about anybody. None of the players give him any props for anything. And he doesn't complain about it. He doesn't say anything about it. You know, he's not one of the cool kids, and he doesn't care that he's not one of the cool kids. And I respect that about him. He could have easily left for Milwaukee. He could have went somewhere like New York or Brooklyn, and he didn't do it. He stayed in Milwaukee. He stayed the course. And let's be honest, the narrative around the Bucks for the past 2 years was this team was fugazi. When the playoffs comes, they're out. Coach Bud doesn't make adjustments. Giannis can't, you know, defeat the wall that people put up in the playoffs. And they did. I don't care that the Nets, you know, were Kevin Durant toenail away from going to the finals, or that, you know, Phoenix got to the finals because the Lakers were hurt. Give them credit, because last year's Bucks team, the 2 years ago, they wouldn't have gotten there. And they found some inner strength or mental fortitude to do it. And they deserve a lot of credit. And so does Giannis. When you drop 50's 50, I don't give a 50's 50. It's 50, period.
Facts.
Like,
facts. In a closeout like, game, in game on. Six,
with, right.
The like, hardest game to win is a closeout game? No. Nah. Come on,
with man. two all-time plays in that series too. He had an all-time defensive play and that all-time. Come on, that block outside of LeBron's the best block I've ever seen in my life. And honestly, like, just like pound for pound, might be a better block than LeBron's. Just LeBron's, which is in Game 7. So, like, what do you like? If you're hating Giannis at this point, it's just because you don't like his game aesthetically. That's really all it is.
Or you just don't like him because he's European. And you have a bias against European players. Let's call it like it is. Let's be honest too. That exists.
It does.
Let's not act like it exists.
But I think it exists.
Ignorant. It's ignorant.
In a weird way, though, I think it exists more towards white Europeans. I can't believe I'm even saying this. But I think a lot of people don't like Luka because he's a white boy running the league. I think a lot of people don't like Jokic because he's a white big boy running the league. I can't believe I'm even saying this, but I do think that exists. You know, in a predominantly black league.
That's the thing, bro. The thing. We need to call bullshit out.
That's what I'm saying. In a predominantly black league with a lot of black people watching, I think a lot of people have a problem with that, where it's just like, damn, this is our game, and these white boys are fucking killing us at it.
And Giannis, a lot of that. And you know how it is, Giannis.
Is light skin. He's light skin.
But he's light skin. He's light skin. Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like, man, he ain't a nigga. Like, come, like this. Shit, like this stuff happens, and it's
he don't play. He don't play like a street kid. He don't play like a city kid.
Exactly.
He don't play like a tough kid. He don't.
Exactly. So there's a lot of that, and this could piss people off. I don't care. This exists a lot out there, man. This ignorance exists out there, and we need to put that shit to bed. Yeah. You know, I knew people that didn't like Kobe because he grew up in Italy. Dead ass, by the way. Right. Dead ass. Like,
that's weird. That's weird.
It just people find any reason not to like a player. It just is what it is. And you just have to call it. You have to call the bullshit for what it is when it exists. And
xenophobia in the NBA, man. It's real.
Hey, listen. American xenophobia will never be mastered. Never. Or never be topped. Nah, man. Like you said, you said everything great there as well, man. How can anybody say anything negative about this Bucks team? You just can't. And as far as the series goes, man, this series was won in two moments. Game four, down by nine in the fourth quarter. The Bucks won the series there, and I think they won the series in the second quarter of game five. That was the series.
I would say the second quarter of game five, because when I was watching game five and the Suns were up, whatever they were, I was like 18. In my head, I'm like, oh, this game's over already. Like, they're going to blow them out. Like, game five at home, like, they just didn't, you know, the Bucks didn't match their energy. It happens. Sometimes you get the doors blown off of you. But to respond the way they did, like, and I said this last week, the fact that they went into halftime that game winning, that's all you need to know about the Bucks team and the series, to be honest with you. Like, to me, that's a microcosm of the series. Down
Coach
early.
Bud made adjustments. Go figure.
Coach Bud made adjustments.
He's another guy who perpetually gets piled on. But
Monty didn't make enough. But I'm not sure if Monty could have. That's the problem. I don't know if his roster, the construction of the roster allowed him to do it.
Yeah, I just don't think he had enough. I mean, Ayton, listen, I don't want to kill the kid because he is a young, big in his first postseason series. But damn, DeAndre, you got to give me better defense than that. I mean, listen, I never advocate violence or hurting a guy, but a hard foul once, you know, put Giannis on his ass once. He was getting abused out there. I mean, that was literally getting abused. And you just feel bad for the kid, right? Because you know he's better than that. Obviously, he's played well this entire postseason, so it's not an indictment on him necessarily. But Jesus Christ, you got to have better defense than that. I mean, soft defense, especially in game six.
Yeah,
you know, and again, I don't want to kill him too bad, you know, and even Devin Booker. I don't want to kill Devin Booker because I know it's his first postseason. And listen,
overall, he had a good series.
Had a good series, but you know, but
a bad moment. Yeah,
right.
Bad moment.
Right. And
bad moment.
And then, of course, we have CP3, which, you know, I know I'm not the biggest CP3 fan. Listen, the problem I have with CP3 is that people put Chris Paul on this pantheon of legendary all-time point guards.
He is.
They put him.
Come on.
But they put him on this pantheon of he's Magic. He's Isaiah. If you're Magic, if you're Isaiah, you can't have a game four like that. I'm sorry. You just cannot. I'm sorry. And I don't want to be prisoner of the moment. I don't want to be hyperbolic. I don't want to be, you know, embrace debate. I don't want to be that person, right? But to me, we got to call people out and call it like it is. And Chris Paul had not a bad game four, an abomination of a game four.
Yeah.
Like he cost them that game.
Yeah.
Literally cost them that game. And he played better in game five, but
he had a really good fourth quarter in game five.
He had a good fourth quarter, helped
really
him come back.
Could have
been the catalyst for them winning it had it not been for a couple of plays there. And then game six, he was okay.
But he wasn't Hall of Fame.
He had good numbers.
He wasn't Hall of Famer, Chris Paul.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, but the problem that myself and other people have that don't like Chris Paul is the media fawning over this guy. Like, Oh, he's just the greatest leader that has ever existed. I mean, he's basically Patton of the NBA.
I mean, I think he's the best point guard of our generation, man. Like in the past 20 years.
He?
Yeah, I take him over. I take him over Kidd. I take him over Nash. Definitely.
Take him over Nash?
Yeah.
No way. I'm not taking him over Steve Nash.
He don't play defense. Nash don't play defense. Like Chris Paul to me, like I think his value exists in the sense where like, and this is what I said when I was like the whole Chris Paul for MVP. Like he don't need to score the basketball. Like just him existing on the court sets everybody up to succeed because he knows how to space the floor. He knows when to attack. He knows how to attack. He knows when to deliver the basketball. His value is more than just stats. That's the thing with Chris Paul. Like he can have a great game. He could dominate a game. His stat line looks like 14-7-7 or something like that. That's why I'm a huge fan of Chris Paul.
Listen, Chris Paul, listen, I'm not going to sit here and tell you Chris Paul's terrible or he's trash.
Right.
No, I know he's a great player. I know he's
awesome. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But again, people put Chris Paul on this pedestal and it's like, and they give him a pass for other playoff disappointments. And I don't think that's fair. Like with the Clippers, he got a pass a lot of years. It was always Blake's fault. Remember that? It was always Blake Griffin's fault. And then he took his playoff failures and went to Houston. And then it was, you know, well, it was injuries. So you can't really blame him. And then he was on the court.
Yeah, he was playing well in that series though, man. That's the thing.
But then what about 2019? KD goes out. In game five of that series,
Right.
Chris Paul and James Harden have no more excuses.
Right.
And they lose game six.
Chris Paul's amazing. Like, his playoff experiences are very mixed bag because he does have big moments. He has a game-winning clutch buzzer beater against the Spurs in a game seven. Like, he has moments. It's just that it's not. But that's what every NBA player, man. I mean, I'll give you an example. I'm gonna give you an example, right? Kobe Bryant, first round, Oklahoma City Thunder, game six in Oklahoma City, takes a fadeaway jumper down one to try to win the game. He misses, but guess what? Pau Gasol's right there to put it back. Lakers win the series in six. Pau Gasol's not there. We go to game seven. Who knows what happens? Another time, series is tied 2-2 against the Phoenix Suns. Game five at home. Kobe Bryant takes a fadeaway jumper from the corner. Air ball. But guess who's right there? Ron Artest puts it back. Lakers up 3-2. So, like, a lot of this stuff, like, I'm not saying Kobe got bailed out. Like, obviously, Kobe Bryant was the best player on those teams and deserves all the credit in the world. But sometimes, like, there are circumstances or things that happen in situations that are out of these players' control.
Luck. It's luck. Yeah. Winning a championship, it takes luck.
Yeah, and I just don't think Chris Paul has had that luck. Like, where was Chris Paul's Ron Artest? Where was Chris Paul's Pau Gasol? You know what I mean? Like, he didn't have that. And I think that's the difference between him having a championship and not having a championship. It's not necessarily him.
No, you're right. You're right. And again, I hate to do this because I'm normally generally on your side when it comes to these type of things. You're right. It takes luck. People are afraid to say, like, winning a championship takes luck. This always isn't something where, you know, it takes, like, even the best teams,
Jordan's
even the
Bulls.
Warriors.
Yep.
They needed a little luck on their side. They needed something to go right and something to go wrong for the other team. It happens. And people are so afraid to admit that. Like, a lot of times it's beyond X's and O's. It's beyond players and coaches. It's just luck. God plays in these games sometimes. It just happens. Like, and in all sports. He does.
Yeah.
He does. Listen, you didn't even have to go back to Kobe. Let's go back to Giannis. If Kevin Durant's foot is half an inch shorter.
We're talking about the next championship right now. Yeah.
And Giannis being a scrub.
Fugazi.
Right? Like, literally, that's how close it was to NBA history being rewritten. Like, these things happen. I get it.
But that's why I don't like the whole drastic, like the spectrum of, like, oh my God, he's this, to, oh, he can't be that, when the razor, like, it's like this thin of a line for us to have, like, these, I'm not saying you're doing this, but, like, the Embrace Debate crowd, like, you can go from being on this side of the spectrum to this side of the spectrum by this much of a margin. And to me, it's like, I don't care what happened in this final series. I know what I think of Chris Paul. I've seen him play his whole freaking career. I see him come up big moments. My opinion on Chris Paul has not changed one iota from this series. Would I've liked to see him win? Absolutely. But just because he had a horrible game four or didn't play up to expectations in game six doesn't mean my opinion on him has changed. It hasn't. He's still one of the greatest point guards I've ever seen, period. No matter what.
Yeah. Yeah. I listen, I like to bag on Chris Paul whenever I get a chance.
I know you do.
It's okay.
a lot of people do. He's not a likable dude. Let's be honest. Chris Paul, he's mean mugging. He's not a nice person. He doesn't seem like he's a nice person. I don't ever think I want to hang out with him.
I think he's a dirty player sometimes too, but
I agree with you. Yeah, I agree. But so was John Stockton. I don't know why I said that. He was. I don't know why I felt the need to mention that, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Listen, everything that you're saying about Chris Paul is right and is accurate. I just think, to me, you got to tell the whole story. Yes, you can tell your side of the story, which is a lot of luck that goes into winning a championship, the journey, the war that is winning a championship. And it's also like, hey, when this guy has had moments where he needed to deliver, he didn't deliver. And that's fact. You can't tell one without the other. And I think it's okay to say, like, look, both of these exist in the same scope. Like, yeah, they have to, you have to tell the both sides of those stories, man. But going back, it's not about the Suns right now. We could talk about the Suns another day. This is about the Bucks, man. The Bucks, I'm not going to go to that question yet. Do you think this changes the perception around the league about small market teams and staying versus building a super team? Do you think obviously it's going to take a lot more situations like this to happen before that conversation becomes louder and more effective? Do you think that this is the start of that? Do you think that this is something that people can look at and say, oh, okay,
yep,
it's possible.
And I'm going to tell you what else is going to add to it. the USA does not win the gold this year, it's going to add to it as well, because by definition, that team is a super team compared to everybody else in the field. So to me, you have a team like Toronto that wins, that wasn't a super team. You have a team like Milwaukee that wins, that's not a super team in two markets. I know Toronto is a pretty big market for Canada standards.
Can we stop this myth that the Lakers last year was a super team?
You have a team like the Lakers that win. The Lakers last year was like LeBron, AD, and like kids off the short bus. Like, I'm just being honest. Like, they were
a little too disrespectful there.
I'm sorry. When your third best player is Alex Caruso, sometimes, I'm not saying every day, but sometimes when Alex, and that's no disrespect to Alex Caruso, but anyone who thinks the Lakers were a super team last year, you need to check yourself, because Alex Caruso should not be mentioned in the conversation as, oh, he was our third best player ever. Yeah. So yeah, I do think so, man. I really do. I think that, you know, the Bucks were built, you know, around their superstar, and they figured out a way to win the same way that the Raptors figured out a way to win.
An injury or a series of injuries occurred. The Raptors, yes, they faced the Warriors team without Klay Thompson and KD.
Right.
Yes. I just have to throw that out.
But even the Warriors, right? I mean, they were technically they're a super team just because of what they ended up being. But before KD, that was a homegrown team with players that they drafted. You know what I mean? Yeah, it wasn't like they didn't sign Klay Thompson. They developed Draymond Green. Steph Curry wasn't always Steph Curry in the league. Like, I always say this all the time. The Knicks were one pick away from getting Steph Curry. If they would have drafted Steph Curry, they would have traded Steph Curry for Melo. Because at that time...
And let's be fair.
Yeah.
Let's be fair. Draymond doesn't get suspended game five. LeBron and Kyrie don't go super Saiyan. Like,
right.
That team wins back-to-back championship and seals it with a 73-9 season. Like,
Kevin Durant still on the Thunder, or he's on another team that wanted to be a super team. It changed the course of history. Just a swift kick to the nuts. But yeah, I do think like teams like a Portland with Dame could be like, you know, we can do this if we just build the right team around Damian Lillard. A team like the Suns now, even though Chris Paul's gonna be gone, we can do this with, you know, building around Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. There's hope, man. There really is. I don't see why anybody would think that super teams are quote like the way to go when we haven't had a super team to win the championship in a while. And then on top of that, we're seeing a lot of super teams fall flat on their face. It happens all the time. You know, the Lakers with Nash, Howard, and Kobe fell on their face. The Knicks, when they tried to build one, fell on their face. The Nets this year fell on their face. Even though it was injury, it still fell on their face. Like, a lot of these super teams are falling on their face. Harden and Chris Paul tried to build one, fell on their face. Like, everyone's just... like, these teams fail more often than not.
Well, the concept that people don't realize is that the entire existence of a salary cap in the NBA as it's structured is designed to not have super teams.
Right.
So the fact that these super teams are being created is almost like an FU to the system. It's like bucking the system as it is. Because if you look at the NBA from a structural perspective, you have a hard cap, and it's designed not to have super teams. Like, it's just a fact. Like, yes, you could play around with the salary cap and you can kind of adjust different who gets what and what percent. But for the most part, you know, it's designed to have one superstar player, maybe two in certain circumstances. And then you have the need and the ability to spread the money around individually to players and positions of need.
Right.
So the fact that the Heat were able to create a super team, or, you know, Golden State eventually, as you said, you know, the Nets or whatever, like, that isn't by design. It's designed not to have to happen. And the fact that it's happening, it's almost like an FU to the system. But you're absolutely right. Like, I think that these super teams have not always been that successful. I mean, let's be honest. The Miami Heat were a disappointment. If you look at it in the grand scheme of things, two championships, four finals appearances. And let's be fair, they were very lucky to win the second championship.
Right.
So,
and they lost. Yeah. They lost to a Spurs team that was built on chemistry. And, you know, they had Tim Duncan, but they weren't a super team. And they also lost to a Dallas Mavericks team that was the definition of an anti super team. Mm-hmm. So it's right. Yeah. I think things come in waves. There's trends. And I think a lot of, you know, owners, especially, like, you know, you want box office, right? You want to sell tickets. So I think a lot of it has to do with that as well. You have the mixture of, like, not only are we getting one of the best players in the league, but now we're gonna have fans coming to our games. So I think a lot of it has to do with that as well.
But see, that's the thing. I actually think it's had an adverse effect. I think it's hurt the league, the fact that super teams exist. I actually think it has hurt the league.
I think it hurts the league in general. But like, if you're the Brooklyn Nets, if you have James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant on the team, you know, you individually Nets,
it's good for the Nets. I don't know if it's good for the NBA. I don't think the NBA has gotten more popular because the Nets exist. I think the Nets have gotten more popular. you know, it's benefited them, but it hasn't benefited the league overall. Yeah,
but if you're the only of the Nets, like, why do you care what the other leagues do? You only care about you. I mean, there's revenue sharing and things like that.
Right. No. I get that. I'm just saying, like, for folks that want to bring that up as an argument or as a talking point to say, well, see, the Nets they were last in attendance and now they're fifth or whatever. Like, it's great for the Nets, but the league hasn't patently gotten better from a ratings or business perspective. If anything, I can make the case that they've gone down business wise and, you know, interest wise and whatever, you know, because of those, a large part because of super teams.
Yeah. I mean, and we all crave, right? We all crave the 90s, right? And a lot of it is nostalgia, but it's also like when I turned on NBA and NBC, you had a triple header. Oh, Jazz and Sonics. I know I'm seeing Stockton and Malone and their squad.
And they're playing on that night.
Right. And they're playing. And you had Kemp and Payton and their squad. Oh, the Knicks are playing.
And the season meant something.
Yeah. The Knicks are playing the Spurs. Oh, Ewing versus David Robinson, his team. And it wasn't like a super team. It was like, yes, there were stars on every team and those stars were the faces of the team. But you knew that like those teams were built around the stars and there were ancillary pieces. It wasn't just like, I'm going to give the ball to Harden and Durant and Kyrie and just watch what happens. Like it was a different feel. It was like, it was more of like a community.
It felt like a balanced league.
Yeah.
And look, I know that people always, the number one talking point people always make is like, well, the NBA has never had parity. You're right. The NBA has never had parity, but you always had a sense that every team had an ability if they drafted the right player. And recently, over the last couple of years, you just like, what hope did a lot of these small market teams had, you know, after a few years? I mean, you're already hearing about it with the Pelicans. Now, the Pelicans haven't necessarily helped the situation. I get it. Right. But you're already hearing about it with Zion. Zion's been in the league 2 minutes and you're already hearing about it.
And Luke a little bit too, here and there, every once in a while.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So like you're already hearing about it now. So it's starting. Like these guys aren't even getting to their second or third contracts. They're complaining in their rookie deals. Like Trae Young is shaking his head. Oh God, Jesus, you know, get me out of here. They don't win in a couple of years.
Porzingis left because he thought the Knicks were going nowhere. I mean, he demanded a trade because he thought the Knicks were going nowhere. Right. So like, it happens. Yeah, you're right.
And that's bad for the league, I think, you know? Yeah.
And by the way, the Mavericks, another super team that's failing because Porzingis and Luka were supposed to be a super team or the start of a super team. They can't even get off the ground as a super team. Sorry.
There you go. There you go, man. There you go. No, good, solid points, man. I think if you're a small market, if you're Charlotte right now, you have hope. Now, obviously, it doesn't just mean just have hope and that's it. No, you have to build a smart roster. Take advantage. And look, you're going to go through some lumps. You're going to go through some hard times. We just talked about Giannis and the Bucks, how they went through playoff failure after playoff failure after playoff failure. So it's not going to be easy. But if you stay the course, if you stay patient and a little luck, however little or major that may be, a little luck goes your way, you can win a championship. Like it's possible. I get so angry where this notion that, you know, you can't win in quote unquote NBA Siberia. You have to go to Miami or LA or New York to win. It's bullshit. It's bullshit.
Like, and Giannis just proved that.
Charlotte has hope. You know, I don't want to say Minnesota has hope because that franchise is, you know, hopeless. Well,
the way they're run is hopeless.
The way they're run, obviously. But, you know, that a franchise like Minnesota has hope. A franchise like Sacramento has hope if they get the right stars, if they get the right player. Listen, all you need is a transcendent player. And I know I say that all you need, like transcendent players just grow on trees.
You have a shot in the draft every year. You basically do. I mean, who knows? I mean, there could be a transcendent player in this year's draft.
If you're Detroit and you have Cade Cunningham or Jalen Green or Suggs or Evan Mobley, either one of those guys can be transcendent players or have the potential to be transcendent players. So listen, Detroit can be here in 5-6 years.
Right.
In the spot. If whoever that kid that they draft to be the face of their franchise develops and they make shrewd moves, build through the draft and or free agency, make shrewd moves, they could be here.
Yeah.
They can be here. So I just get so frustrated when people talk about like, oh no, you know, Zion needs to leave New Orleans because he can't win in a place like New Orleans. No, maybe New Orleans just needs to run a better basketball operation and maybe they could win.
Right. It has nothing to do with being in New Orleans. It has everything to do with the fact that their GMs are making terrible decisions. Maybe their coaches aren't as good. You have to make the right decisions like Milwaukee did and like Phoenix did. to give them some credit as well, because they made the finals and could have won it too.
What do you feel? Do you feel like Milwaukee is one and done, or do you think this could be the start of something bigger in Milwaukee?
I mean, when I say bigger, I do think they're going to be a perennial threat to win the Eastern Conference every year. I do think the Nets, just by nature of the roster, are the heavy favorites going into next season. I do think if they were healthy, they would have won, you know, that series in like five or six. So I do think you have to give the Nets some credit. You have to respect the fact that the Nets have all that talent. But with that being said, I mean, you have three players that are kind of injury prone now going into next season, who still haven't really played much basketball together, going against a championship team who has been through adversity, that has chemistry. So to me, you know, off the top of my head, who's going to be in the Eastern Conference Finals next year again? You know, this is before free agency, this is before the draft, but it's going to be the Nets and the Bucks again. You know, and then the Bucks have the psychological advantage with the fact that they beat them last year in seven games in Brooklyn, Giannis outplaying KD. So, you know, success kind of is relative. If I'm a Bucks fan, and let's just say hypothetically they lose in seven in the Eastern Conference Finals next year, yeah, it's kind of disappointing, but you're still around. You're still a threat. And just because you lose next year doesn't mean that the year after you can't come back and win the championship again. So I do think the Bucks have, you know, their window's still open. Their window's going to be open for the next 4 or 5 years, because Giannis is freaking young. He's like 26 years old or whatever, 28 years old, whatever he is. So as long as he's in his prime, there is no reason why the Bucks shouldn't be at least in the conversation of winning the championship. It wouldn't surprise me if they win another one within the next 4 or 5 years. Do I think they're going to be a dynasty? No, not at all. But it wouldn't shock me if they win another one, and it wouldn't shock me at all if they get to another finals. Maybe not next year, but maybe the year after or the year after.
Before this series, before this championship, I would have said, yeah, the Bucks have a chance. Their window's still open, as long as you have that fucking monster, that freak in there. Of course you have a chance after this championship. Oh, I definitely think this could be the start of something special in Milwaukee. I really do. Now, listen, I don't know. You know, I'm not a fucking psychic. I don't know what's going to happen next year. Yes, on paper, should the Nets be the favorites? But listen, everybody acts like Milwaukee's just this Johnny come lately team that came out of nowhere, this Cinderella team. Like, no, they've had the best record in the league over the last 3-4 years.
Yeah.
Like, this idea that the Milwaukee Bucks just came out of nowhere it's a fallacy. Right. Not to mention, now they have a championship and Giannis is infinitely better than he's been. And he's only going to get better.
Right.
Like, the sky's the limit. And plus, do we know what the Nets are going to look like next year?
That's what I'm saying. We have no idea.
KD. Obviously, KD is great and he's special. And when he's on the court, he's second to none. But he's injury prone. James Harden, injury prone, and doesn't show up in the postseason. That's fact. Then Kyrie, who the hell knows? Does he play 40 games? Does he play 80 games next year? Does he show up at all? Does he go AWOL? I don't know.
Is he in Budapest for a humanitarian?
Is he in Brooklyn? Is he in Brooklyn? Like, do they trade this motherfucker? Like, they need a bench. Like, this idea that Brooklyn's just this finished product. Like, no, they're not. Yeah. They have issues. Can Steve Nash coach? Like, that's a real question mark.
Right.
I don't know. And then outside of Brooklyn, who else is the team in the Eastern Conference? Atlanta? Yeah, okay.
Atlanta's a few years away.
I gotta see it again from Atlanta.
Let's see what the Sixers do with Ben Simmons.
Sixers? I don't know. Can you sit here and tell me right now that you know what the Sixers are going to be next year? I don't know.
I think the Heat are that one year was a fluke in the bubble.
Were a fluke.
Yep. The Knicks aren't there yet. The Knicks are like 3 years away, 2-3 years away.
The Knicks are not there yet. Yeah. You know, Atlanta, I got to see it again. Boston may be the team. Like, I don't think Boston's roster is that bad. I just don't. Yeah. I think they need to stay healthy and be consistent.
Yeah.
And maybe a different voice in the locker room might
help. Boston might be there, but I mean, we don't know what Boston's roster is going to look like, but I would still take Milwaukee today over Boston. But Boston is kind of like, you know, they're on the outskirts.
And here's the thing. Outskirts. For folks that are questioning this, right?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Milwaukee's probably not going to stand pat. Milwaukee's going to make moves. They're going to get better. Like, they need shooters. I'm sure Milwaukee will go out and get some shooters. If you're a free agent right now, if you're a veteran out there that's looking to win a championship, yes, you could go to Brooklyn. Yes, you can go to LA. Outside of those two teams, maybe Golden State. Outside of those two, maybe three teams, you'd be able to tell me the Bucks don't become.
There's two teams attractive. That come to mind. Yeah, I think the Bucks become very attractive. And if I'm a shooter, I want to play with Zion. Because he needs a shooter. And if I want to make money, if I want to be the shooter, what I'm saying is, like, I know what you're saying. Because New Orleans desperately needs a shooter. I can be that shooter for Zion for the next 4 to 5 years, sign me the fuck up. Get me paid. Right.
No, I agree. But I'll use Milwaukee as an example. You mean to tell me that guy, like, if you're Lou Williams and you won a championship, you mean to tell me you don't want to sign with Milwaukee?
Right.
Go there, come off the bench for 20 minutes, be that scorer and that playmaker off the bench. Sometimes you could play together with Jrue Holiday. Like, why not?
Right.
And you're getting Dante DiVincenzo back. Pat Connaughton's not going anywhere. So just by getting DiVincenzo back and healthy, that infinitely makes that team better. And if you add a couple shooters to surround Giannis with, the core is set. Middleton and Giannis and Jrue. Brook Lopez, you can phase him out eventually. You know, you could phase PJ Tucker out eventually. You know, you can add and take away pieces here and there, but the core is set, especially Middleton and Giannis. That's the core. This team's got life. Like, listen, I don't want to sound like a homer right now. They've got a window, and it's up to them and their GM and their owner to take advantage of this right now. But Milwaukee's in an infinitely better spot today than they were 2 weeks ago, or they were last year, to be a possible dynasty in the NBA.
I don't know if there'll be dynasty, but it's a possibility. But
you know what I mean? Win multiple champions.
The window is there. It's a big window, too. Like, when I say big window, I mean like 5, 6, 7.
26. Giannis is 26.
Yeah. It could be like, anywhere from like 6 to 8 years. Yeah.
Kyrie, Harden, and KD, they're all 30 and above. KD's 32. Harden, people forget, is 31, I believe. 31.
I never won anything either.
Right. So everybody just acts like the Nets are just basically close your eyes and that's it. Write them in the finals. I don't know what this team's going to look like.
Especially KD too. Like, it's second year off of that injury. Like, I don't know how he's going to respond off of that. Who knows how he's going to respond off of that. So yeah, I mean, like I said, I think you have to at least consider the Nets just based off of talent alone, because those are three of the most talented guys in the league. Three of the top 10 most talented guys in the league. I don't think that's a question. But yeah, I think the window is wide open for the Bucks. And honestly, they have the biggest window out of anybody in the Eastern Conference. I think them and probably the Hawks, because I don't think the Hawks were a fluke. I think the Hawks are going to be around for a while. They need to add some pieces. They're not at the level the Bucks are yet. They'll probably take their bumps and bruises, and maybe they make it Eastern Conference Finals again next year or something like that, or Eastern Conference Semis. But they'll be around for a little bit. But the Bucks right now have the biggest window in the East for sure. The Nets have a window, and it's wide open, but it's going to close in like a year or two.
And Boston's the ultimate wild card, I will say.
Yeah, I agree.
Because if they figure out some of their roster construction issues and chemistry issues,
they just need certain tweaks.
Boston has a right. Yeah, there's just certain tweaks. I still like that roster. I still like that roster as is. Like,
I do too.
No moves, just add some tweaks here and there. Like, I don't think they need to trade Jaylen Brown for Bradley Beal. To me, that's redundant. To me, you get worse. Because you get. Yes, you get better offensively, but you get worse defensively.
Right. And Jaylen and Jason like each other. Like, you're not breaking.
Yes. And they play well together.
Yeah, they're fine.
I don't think Boston has that much to go, you know? So yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm with you, but great story for the league. Oh, before I guess we move on from the NBA, where do you put this finals performance from Giannis in the context of
history? Here's the thing. I don't have like, this is the best finals ever in my head. I don't have that order in my head, but you cannot sit here and act like it's not one of the greatest finals performances of all time. You drop 40 twice, 50 once, down 0-2, come back, have two of the greatest plays in NBA finals history, one on the defensive end, one on the offensive end. It was nothing short of legendary. I don't know how I would rank finals performances in my head. I don't know who had the best finals. I don't know, but I know for a fact that if I was going to list like a top five or top 10, he absolutely would be in there. I don't even have to look at past finals performances. I know Isaiah had a couple of Magic and Bird probably had some. LeBron had his share. Jordan, I know that they're there, but it's very hard to beat two 40-point games, a 50-point game in a closeout, and two legendary plays all in one series while coming back down 0-2. Like, how do you you know what I mean? There's just... I know Shaq had some dominant finals with the Lakers as well. Shaq was unbelievable. Like, Shaq was so dominant that like it wasn't even a contest. It's like, oh, okay. Like, what, against the Nets, like, all right, this series is over after game one. Like, you knew it was. So, I mean, Shaq's probably up there as well. But if you're going to have a conversation about like who had the greatest finals performance of all time, you at least have to mention this finals from Giannis. It may not be your answer at the end of the day, but it is at least in the discussion for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. I mean, yeah, you can bring up, you can bring up Jordan, obviously, a few times. You can bring up, a Kobe Finals performance here and there. I mean, definitely against the Magic, where he was just clearly the best player on the court, and it wasn't even like to be debated.
Underrated play in that series, by the way, the Lakers were down 4 in Game 4. Kobe Bryant goes into lanes. Beautiful no-look pass to Powell. No one ever talks about that pass. They were down 4. It looked like the Magic were going to win because of free throws, and Kobe spin move in the lane.
I remember
playing pass to Powell. Mm-hmm. Lakers down 2. I was like, okay, Kobe. I love that's one of my favorite Kobe plays, and no one ever like talks about it. I never see it get played, but I just wanted to
obviously you can bring up that series. You can bring up, obviously, like I said, Jordan. You can bring up LeBron and some losing efforts, has some tremendous finals runs. Listen, you're right. Where do we rank it? It's in the discussion. I would rank it there. I mean, it's in the discussion. I mean, I think it has to be there, whether you want to put it one, whether you want it. I'm sure, some OG performances that we're not talking about in the 50s and 60s.
Bill Russell
Bob Pettit had a great finals run here and there. I think Rick Barry had an incredible finals run some years back. And obviously, I mean, listen, just look at the numbers and just make your decision based on that. Look at the important details, and if you saw the games or watched or are capable of watching the games, just make your decision on that. Yeah, if you want to tell me that, this may not be, the top 3 performance, but it's in the top 5, sure. I don't even know how you didn't say it's top 3. I mean, the guy, like you said, 240-point games, iconic plays left and right, and then, of course, you drop 50 as the ultimate kind of, bookend to a series.
Efficient. It wasn't volume, it was efficient.
And I'll end with this. I don't hate, but people always hate when I say, superstars have to rise to the level of the moment and there's certain games that a superstar is going to have to win. And people always say, oh, that's bullshit. That's cap. No, that doesn't exist. Watch game 6. There was a moment in that series, in game 6, especially in the third quarter, where the Bucks looked dead. They looked dead. And Giannis, he turned it up. He took that game over and said, guys, we're not losing tonight.
Yeah.
If I'm touching the ball every possession, I'm either scoring or I'm getting fouled.
Yeah.
That's when guys take over games. That's when guys put on, you want to call it legacy performances, iconic performance, whatever. That's when a guy says, I'm not letting my team go home. Are you listening, James Harden? That's what James Harden needed to do game 7, 2018. Yeah. When his team was missing 30 odd 3-pointers in a row, James Harden needed to say, coach, give me the damn ball. Get the hell out of my way. Run every play through me. I'm either going to the line, getting fouled, or I'm scoring. And sometimes I may score by laying it up and getting fouled. Sometimes I may get a jump shot. Maybe I get a step back 3, but I am taking us home. That's what great players in these big moments do. And a lot of guys fall short of that. And when people ask you what does that mean exactly? What is that? Chapter and verse, game 6, 2021 NBA Finals. And Giannis. Right. Because there was a stretch there where he literally took every single shot in that third quarter.
Yeah. Yeah. And it wasn't just game 6 too. It was the whole series. It was the whole series. Which made it even better. I mean, like I said, he doesn't block Ayton's alley-oop. I mean, we're talking Suns up 3-1. They might be champions right now. It's just little things like that. And he did it defensively too. It's not just scoring the basketball. He also saw the floor very well. I don't think he forced the issue. He made the right pass when he had to.
They built the wall and he passed out. He became a playmaker. He's a better passer than people give him credit for.
He's always been a good passer too. That's one thing I've always liked about Giannis. He's always been a low-key, really good passer. Always. He always had that.
Listen, just to wrap this up, congratulations to the Bucks, man. Dude, good win, good for the league, good for that franchise, and good for Giannis, man. That's another thing, too. This kid took a lot of abuse, a lot of criticism. He got a lot of shit slinged on him, rightfully so. And I love when a guy takes the criticism and then actually works on his game and improves and works on the things that he gets. Is he a finished product yet? No. Not by any stretch, but I'm telling you right now, if this is what we see from Giannis and then some to come. Yeah. The sky's the limit for this dude.
For sure.
Really is. Ben Simmons, you listening? He actually worked on his game in the offseason and in the season as well. It's crazy.
But even that, like, just to add the Ben Simmons point, right? Like, Giannis still didn't shoot the three ball well. He still doesn't have the really that good of an outside shot, but he didn't shy away from doing what he did best. He stayed aggressive. My problem with Ben is like, okay, if you don't want to shoot the three, if you still can't shoot the three, okay, but still be aggressive. Like, still play the game of basketball. Take the ball.
Don't be a net negative offensively.
Right. Don't pass on when you have an open dunk. Like, that's the difference. Like, yeah, you know, Giannis didn't shoot the three and you didn't shoot the three and Giannis may have fall back and not take it, you know, has taken perimeter jump shots, but he got extra aggressive. He said, you know what? I'm going to double down on what I do best. And that's what he did. Ben just fell back out and just didn't play the game of basketball. That's the difference in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And Giannis again proved you can win with a small market and prove with the team that you drafted. Yep. Damian Lillard. Yeah, because apparently Damian Lillard has, you know, he's playing basically with the 1979 Kansas City, you know,
the Kings, Washington Generals.
Washington Generals. You know, he's playing with the bench players that play on the Globetrotters. You know, yeah. Essentially is what Damian Lillard is playing with. But yeah, man, we'll move on. Yeah, it's a good story. Good for the league. And I'm happy. I'm actually happy, man. I'm not. Good. I mean, obviously, I'm a Laker fan, so I'm a little disappointed that it's not the Lakers. But yeah, I'm happy for the league, man.
As a basketball fan. It was cool.
Yeah. Let's move on to other things that annoy us besides sports. The richest man in the world took a space travel exhibit.
Took a penis
exhibition. Rocket. Right? Yeah. 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 He took a trip. He took a trip on a rocket ship somewhere in the great beyond. What can you even say about Jeff Bezos anymore, man? Like it's that shit really annoyed me this week. Like literally just annoyed me this week. I'm like, you know, literally at the same time that we hear all these stories about Amazon and their basically criminal efforts to bust unions and their treatment of employees and workers, et cetera. You literally have this jackass, you know, gallivanting across the universe in his mind anyway, you know, in his own little private space rocket, you know, nah, the world is great. Doesn't it feel great to be 100 and gazillionaire, billionaire, and be able to basically pay for my own travel to go into space? It's sickening. It really is sickening. It's the shit that just really annoys me, man. But it's capitalism. You know, it's capitalism at its finest, right? And you know what the part that really made my day or really made my week is the fact that he unintentionally said the quiet part out loud. Yep. You know, he basically thanked every Amazon worker, every Amazon employee, like, you made this happen. And all of us like idiots. Yep, we made it happen.
No, that's the part that irked me the most, where he's like, you guys did it. Like, the tone deafness of it all, you know, like the arrogance, like that you were this important. It's like main character syndrome. Like you're this hero who went into space. I mean, the man, I don't have the words because the way people defend billionaires in this country drives me crazy. Now I could talk trash about Jeff Bezos and how big of a piece of shit he is and how he treats the Amazon workers and, you know, busting unions and all that. But the fact is that we still have a significant party in this country that props up billionaires and defends corporations and does tax cuts for corporations and will do everything in their power to make sure that people like Jeff Bezos exist. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Bernie said, this is what I love about Bernie. Bernie is not shy of saying things like billionaires shouldn't exist. And in a capitalist country, it's crazy to say, but that's like a controversial statement. Like,
you mean billionaires shouldn't exist? Are you saying the American dream can't exist and that someone can't achieve as much wealth as possible?
Anyone who's listening right now who disagrees with that, I need you to really just sit down and think of how much money $1 billion is. You have more in common with the homeless person down the street who's begging for change than you do with Jeff Bezos. You will never ever in your life have anything in common with that man. He is stealing from you. The man pays $0 in taxes.
Zero.
People get mad at people who might take advantage of a welfare system or who don't take advantage of a welfare system, who are legitimately on welfare because their tax dollars go to that. Well, where do you think your tax dollars are going to, like, aside from that as well? How do you think the government's making up the difference with what he's getting away with? On top of that, not paying your workers a living wage, horrible working conditions. What pisses me off is that we have a large portion of the society that looks at that man, that looks at Elon Musk and thinks that these guys are heroes. It's disgusting. These people are like, they're like movie villain evil, like 1000% movie villain.
No,
evil.
They are.
And it's just disgusting, man. I mean, to see him, like, and you said it, you nailed it on the head, man. To say the quiet part out loud. You did this. Thank you to every Amazon worker who let me go to space for fucking 15 minutes. That cost
every Amazon worker that I treat like shit. Right. And, basically don't give bathroom breaks to. And
this workers that don't. You could have had a $4 raise with the amount of money that I did with it. Like, come on, dude. Like the fact that you have to hoard this much money and don't have, like, just a human decency or the perspective to be like, you know what? I could change people's lives if I just kind of give them $4 more an hour instead of being worth $6 billion. I might be worth 4.5. Oh no. Like it's disgusting that these people even get press coverage. It's disgusting that if I type Jeff Bezos' name into Google right now, there's going to be like articles like Jeff Bezos goes to space. How cool. Like that's disgusting. Like that is absolutely disgusting.
Oh, but didn't you hear he gave Van Jones $100 million so to do with whatever to whatever quote unquote charities. So it makes it all right, guys. It's okay.
It's disgusting,
Josh. It's okay now because he gave Van Jones $100 million,
and that's another thing, and that's another issue where like people swear like private charity is going to solve things and not systemic change. I mean, that's what they do. It's like here's a check. See, I did good. It's like no, you didn't do good. First of all, it's a tax write off because you're going to get that freaking money back, and second of all, things can't change unless it's systemic. And they know that it can't change unless systemic.
They know.
It's disgusting.
What bothers me the most? Yeah. The two things that bother me the most. I'll start with the second part first. Like you said, right? That this man has. I'm not one of those folks that believes that billionaires shouldn't exist. I know it's kind of shocking when you know my political leanings. I think if you work hard and you do your thing and you take advantage of a capitalistic society and environment and regulations, yeah, sure, you can make as much money as you can. My issue with that is to not have your own personal accountability. Like I can't go to bed. Maybe I swear to God, and maybe people will call me on it, call me bullshit or whatever, but I can't go to sleep knowing I have $120 billion in the bank and there's literally people sleeping in cars and on the side of the road and me not say, you know what, I'm going to help people. Because that's just the right thing to do. You know, I can't sleep at night knowing that I have $120 billion in the bank and we have vets that are homeless in this country with a country that's doing the bare minimum, if that, to help them. I can't sleep at night knowing that. So I would want to help them. It's like it's the personal accountability. Like you can make as much money as you want. Do you technically owe anybody your success? Probably not, although the capitalistic system as a whole is comprised of people taking advantage of another person. That's just how capitalism works, right? It's the bare essence of it.
Yeah, like in order to be a billionaire, some people think in order to be a billionaire, you had to exploit so many people along the way that you've done more damage to the to society.
There is an element of that. There is an element of that for sure. But I'm not one to say like, oh yeah, I don't think anybody should be a billionaire. That's not the issue. You eliminate billionaires is not the issue. To me, is the issue is that there isn't enough personal accountability and responsibility from people that make that much money to say, look, I'm going to make change and not just run for office for vanity reasons, but actually go out there and make change and make and use your money for good. And yes, people will bring up, well, Bill Gates uses his money for good. Does he really, though? Because he's part of the reasons why nations like India can't get the Pfizer vaccine. Because he's pals with a lot of these pharmaceutical companies and he's made it so that different nations, different corporations, different companies can't, for patents and intellectual property situations, can't reproduce the vaccines across the world. Bill Gates is chiefly responsible for that, right? So is he really using his money for good? It's easy to go out there and say, oh, I'm going to write a check to some small nation in Africa that you'll never see and people that you'll never see and that'll never impact your life, but to actually make tangible change in people's lives. Like FDR was a millionaire. And FDR is probably the greatest president this country has ever had because he understood the value of money and the responsibility that he himself had to making people's lives, especially working class people's lives, better.
Well, he understood the system, and that's the thing. Like,
and he understood the country and how it works.
Right, but Bezos and Elon Musk, they understand it, but they're on the opposite end where it's like they don't fucking care about us. That's the that's the difference. FDR understood how it worked. He's like, he understood that workers needed rights. You needed to unionize. You needed to put the power in the hands of workers. Where Bezos and Elon Musk are the exact opposite, where it's like, I don't want my company unionizing. I don't want my workers to have any rights. And people might think that's exaggeration, but it's literally not. These people
it's
have
true.
Literally
go read it. Go look it up.
Literally,
it up
right literally now. Have fought against workers' rights and unionization. It's disgusting. It's disgusting. I just think the hero worship of them bothers me more than them themselves, if that makes any sense. Because yes, they're pieces of shit. I understand that. There's gonna be pieces of shit everywhere. But the fact that there's so many people that look up to them, like I had a conversation with someone the other day, my friend's father, who said that he thinks Elon Musk should run for president. And I pushed back and I was like, no. He's like, why not? He's like, his reasoning was like, he's so rich that he wouldn't have to respond to anybody. And I responded, I was like, he's so rich that he doesn't give a damn about any workers and their rights and the working class. Yeah. And then on top of that, he's on the wrong side of every social issue you could possibly think of. That's another thing.
And that's the other thing. Like, we need to stop thinking that like money is the fix for all issues going on in the world, right? Like,
not just that, but money is not a key to morality. Just because you are rich doesn't mean you are a moral human being and that you are a good person. A lot of people equivocate being rich with being smart and being kind and doing things the right way. A lot of the times,
a lot of people fail up. Let's be honest. A lot of fucking people fail up.
Donald Trump. Failed up. Donald Trump has been failing his whole freaking life, and he was president of the United States of America.
But he's lucky that he has the skin that he has, and he's lucky that he had the parents and the trust fundness that he had, and he took advantage of it. And to his credit, I guess give him credit, right?
He took advantage of whatever opportunities he has. But there's a portion of this country, there's a political party in this country, and there are people who vote for that political party who ascribe wealth to being smart and knowing what you're doing. Because when Donald Trump ran in 2016, what'd you hear? Well, I think he's a good businessman and knows how to run the country. All because he was rich and had money that he inherited.
But again,
they assumed he was smart. They assumed he was moral. They assumed he had ethics because he was able to be rich. They aspired to be that way. If you're poor, it's your fault. It's on you. And people like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk has convinced people that if you're poor, it is on you. You need to work harder. It's your problem. It's not my problem. Look what I did. I invented Amazon. You could be just like me. They turn it around and they blame it on you. And whenever you need help from the government, they say, whoa, what? You shouldn't need help from the government. The government's bad. We're the good guys. It's so backwards. And it's so crazy to me that people actually buy into it and believe it. Like these guys, like I said, they are literal like movie villains. And the fact that people can't see it is just mind blowing to me. I'm more frustrated at that than the fact that these guys even exist, because at the end of the day, like these guys can't exist the way they do if we're not propping them up ourselves.
Yeah, man, you're absolutely right. It's sickening. It's the hero worship that exists with these people. It's the fact that Jeff Bezos owns a newspaper in this country, like literally owns one of the powerful, basically one of the newspapers of record. And like literally no one has a problem with it. No one even bats an eye about it at this point. It's a crime. It really is.
That should 1000%.
It should be absolutely be illegal. It should be, but it won't be because he's a superhero. He's a real life superhero. Those are the folks that we equate as superheroes, not you know, teachers, not community activists, not, you know, doctors, lawyers. You know, these are the people that we equate as superheroes. Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, Michael Bloomberg. Oh, God, fuck. Like these morons, these individuals that half the time fail up in life. But, you know, and that's not taking away anything from Jeff Bezos' genius. When it comes to his business, that's not taking anything away from Elon Musk. Like there's a lot of things. I've read a lot of things on Elon Musk. I think he's brilliant when it comes to business and his innovation. That's not taking anything away from these individuals. Like the same vein, I can say that Jeff Bezos is a piece of shit. I can also give him credit for saying he's a genius who is an incredibly smart man who developed a flawless business model. You can say that. And also say he's a piece of shit who doesn't pay taxes.
He's a narcissist. Workers. They're sociopaths.
Yeah, these guys are sociopaths. I mean, it's just the interviews that he gave after that fucking space trip. Oh, God, just rubs you. And like you said it best, the tone deafness of it. That's what bothers me as well. It's like the tone deafness of it, all. It's like you literally have those interviews. You literally have that coverage right now as we are literally dealing with a pandemic that is affecting the globe, not just America, but the globe. Literally have countries that don't even have enough resources to provide their folks with the vaccine. That Jeff Bezos could probably assist with that, but no, he's taking a trip to space. But hey, you know, my Prime membership paid for it. You know, your Prime membership paid for it.
I'm so happy to see.
I'm so happy, Jeff.
To see my hero go to space for 15 seconds. Oh, it was so worth it. So worth it. Yeah. That money could have went to funding Medicare for all, but you know what? No. You know, that money could have went
to Medicare for all. Now, Josh,
that could have wiped out some college debt for some, you know, hardworking, you know.
No. Oh, that's a good point. You know, we can't eliminate college debt because, people, you know, millennials and Gen Zers might have a leg up entering the working world and, you know, maybe able to do something with themselves at a young age. But no, we can't do that. God forbid.
I can't give you a raise and pay you $17 an hour. 17? You wanted 15. Now you want 17? How dare
the fact that Jeff Bezos can literally wipe out all of the student debt in this country.
Right, it's now disgusting. And be okay. And be more than okay. Like what? What? It's crazy. Like that's what I'm, and that's the whole billionaire shouldn't exist theory, where it's just kind of like no one person should have that much power.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm not one to say that.
No, because you don't want to stunt creativity and entrepreneurship. I get it. Because I do think that should exist. And I do agree with you on that
level. But when people bring it up, it's like, it's hard to argue against when you see these cases, like is literally this one man having all this power and literally just no ability whatsoever to inspire change at a high level. And yes, some idiots could probably respond to this and say, oh, well, he gives a lot to charity. Anybody can sign a blank check to charity.
Gives a lot to charity.
Doing their part. That means
pays nothing in taxes.
Yeah, exactly.
So to that YouTube commenter who says that, think of the taxes you pay instead of getting mad at the family down the street that's on welfare, get mad at Jeff Bezos because he's not paying anything. And he can afford to pay enough taxes for your whole fucking county, wherever you live, I guarantee it.
But hey, congratulations on Jeff and his vanity project that is to go to space. Oh, did you hear his plans on climate change, by the way?
No. Do I want to hear it?
He says, and I'm paraphrasing here, basically we have to rid ourselves of all the issues and all the things that pollute our environment and put it in space and preserve Earth as this beacon and bastion of, oxygen and fresh water and all those great things, you know. So simply just taking pollution and toxins and viruses and, you know, fossil fuels and all that, and just shipping it off to space, you know, putting it in Venus or wherever. And that's it.
I hate him.
Oh my God. Jeff Bezos, man. He's the gift that keeps on giving. For all the wrong reasons.
Yep.
And the fact that he lacks the self-awareness to realize how horrible he sounds and he comes off. Like, I just praise this guy for being smart. And like, honestly, if you listen to him talk, he doesn't sound smart at all. Like, he really sounds like a fucking idiot.
He's a sociopath. Does not care about anything but himself. People's feelings, people's needs, no empathy. He's a sociopath. 1000%.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but hey, he's in space now. So, and he's going to eradicate the world of climate change issues or issues with climate change.
Yep.
Yeah. So God bless him. God bless his little heart. Jeff Bezos, wherever you are, God bless your little heart.
Yep.
He means well. He means well.
Yep.
I guess we could wrap up. And no, my apologies for real though. Rookie mistake. Didn't charge my laptop, didn't get the cord for it fast enough, and it died.
And it was Jeff. We all know it was Jeff.
Yeah, it was Jeff. I'm sorry. But I apologize just because I pissed off our grandmaster corporate overlord and
Make sure you repent before you go to sleep tonight, Manny.
I do. I will. Okay. I'll tell you this, Jeff, if you're listening, I will place a special Amazon order in your name.
And be grateful for that free shipping. Be grateful.
No, actually, I will renounce all Prime. I will renounce it. I will not take it. Even if it's an item that is with Prime, I just won't. I won't even do it. I won't. I will renounce all Prime at all.
Yep.
Praise be. Praise be.
For sure. For sure. As I drink my Crystal Light. You, sir. Cuba, man. I guess we can wrap up with Cuba. Another powder keg, I guess, of an amalgamation of a lot of issues going on, years in the making. It's crazy. I thought this only happened in the Middle East. Wow, it's crazy. anyway, so who would have thought? Yeah, Cuba. I guess shit is, I wouldn't say it's hit the fan, but it's definitely starting to.
Yeah.
And maybe COVID is the impetus for change in that country after so many years, hopefully.
It's like a perfect storm of everything. You know, I'm more familiar with our relationship with Cuba than I am what it actually is like to live in Cuba. I do know that, like, when it comes to healthcare and education, like, they're kind of like the standard, which is weird for being an authoritarian communist state. You know, it's one of those things where it's like the quality of life isn't so bad because you have these things, but at the same time, it's an authoritarian state. So therefore you can't speak out against, you know, the government. You know, doctors don't make, you know, doormen make more than doctors over there, apparently, where it's just kind of like, you know, they're kind of capitalist in the sense where, you know, they use the American dollar and they encourage entrepreneurship, but a lot of money has to go back to the government. It's I don't completely understand it, so I don't try to make sense of what it's like to be in Cuba. From my standpoint, though, as an American, to see what we have done to that country is criminal. And it's just disgusting. And right now, you know, the Biden administration is in power, so I will be speaking to the Biden administration specifically. But, you know, there's embargoes on this country. We have a lot of different restrictions that we have placed on Cuba. You can lift that with a stroke of a pen, Joe. You can help these. You can help a little. You can help a little bit. I'm not saying that Americans are the sole reason why things are going down in Cuba, even though it's a lot to do with it. With the fact, you know, we used to have, you know, private businesses in Cuba, and we used to funnel all the money they make to our country. And, you know, when they finally stood up for themselves, we shut the country down and all their exports. And we basically are the reason why they can't make money. There's a lot that goes behind all this stuff. But right now, Joe, you can fix it. You can absolutely at least try to improve relations. You can at least try to do your part in helping improve that economy and making life better for Cubans. So, you know, I don't want to speak much about the Cuban government or the way of life in Cuba, which is just the fact that I think there are things I'm ignorant to, and there's nuances that I don't completely understand. But just from an American standpoint, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, like, Trump put over 200 restrictions on Cuba. Like, just slapped them on after Obama tried to, you know, strengthen relations. And, you know, Joe, like, you're tweeting out about Cuban liberation and you're not doing anything about it. This is when you're supposed to step up and be for, you know, freedom and the American way of life, apparently, or what you tout the American way of life is. And you're not doing anything about it. So just from a standpoint of that, I think we should be putting pressure on the Biden administration to just stop talking about the atrocities that are going on in Cuba and admit our role in the reasons why these atrocities are happening and do right to fix them. So that's the angle that I come at. You know, I don't really know too much about Cuba, and it's, I know enough, but I don't know the nuances enough to, like,
no, I get it.
So
I get it. No, you come from a really good place.
Yeah.
And it's a fair place, and you're not wrong on anything that you just said. Cuba's hard, man, because in one breath, like you said, they lead a lot of the world and a lot of different things. But, you know, I just hate when we try to simplify the argument as, oh, see, communism doesn't work.
It's a whole lot of things.
Communism doesn't work. Like, no, it's not. It's not just communism. It's communism mixed with authoritarianism and totalitarianism.
But also, like,
causes.
And they also got into where they were because of capitalism. Like, that's what they think. They're communists now. They're communists now. But before all this happened, it was a capitalist society that was basically just run by the American government. America was taking all their profits.
Yes.
And
then on top of that, We cannot ignore the fact that the embargo has had a lot to do with why this country is in the shape that it's in. Like, right. You cannot ignore that. It's right. a fact.
Yes.
And we need to talk about it. Like,
exactly.
And listen, Cuba is the greatest example of the U.S. foreign policy disaster, or the disaster that is U.S. foreign policy over the last 70 years. They're a chief example of that.
Yeah.
You know, from everything going on in the Middle East with Israel and Palestine, and of course, obviously, chapter and verse, Iraq, you know, Saudi Arabia, you know, Iran, Syria. I mean, go on and on, right? To Cuba. They are a chief example of why the U.S. foreign policy, I didn't want to say strategy, but I'll say it for lack of a better word, for the U.S. foreign policy strategy is a joke,
right?
Because it's like we've right. enabled this to happen. And then and what I love about it too is like we've you could make the case that on two fronts we've been responsible for the downfall of Cuba. Obviously the capitalistic society that existed
right.
before the Castros took over, and then obviously the embargo and right. all the issues that has caused, right? But then we sit on our high horse, and then we throw stones living from right. our fucking glass
house. You see what communism? But the fact of matter, the fact is, it is true though. Like the Castros, they do play a role. Like, you know, they did.
They do play a role, but to sit there and say that it's only Castro, or it's only this,
right.
or it's only that. It's such a nuanced right. situation,
right?
That
it's not just communism. It's a very tricky situation in the sense where it's like. Capitalism led to communism. It was almost like a worst case of like Marxism, if that makes any sense. Like capitalism led to communism, but you got into the wrong hands of Castro and an authoritarian who just basically abused the powers.
And listen, this may be unpopular, but I don't give a fuck about saying unpopular things, you know, but Castro isn't this monster that the American media will have you believe. Listen, Fidel Castro is probably one of the most complicated figures of the 20th century. He is, because there's a lot of good there in Castro and what he did.
A lot of bad, though.
And there's a lot of bad.
The bad is so bad.
And the bad is really bad, right? Listen, I'm not sitting here trying to defend Fidel Castro and say that he's an angel or that he's, you know, we should basically worship him like our great father, Jeff Bezos. What I'm saying is that he's a complicated figure in history.
Yeah.
A lot of good mixed with a lot of bad. The bad was really bad. There was a lot of really good too, though. And how do you split the difference, right? And yeah, it's easy for me to say that because I'm not Cuban. I don't have Cuban ancestors. I don't have Cuban fathers and mothers and grandparents that have been persecuted by this government. So it's easy for me to say that. And I totally understand my privilege there. But I just get annoyed when we let American media tell us about Fidel Castro when there's a lot of complicated themes and issues when analyzing Fidel Castro.
Yeah.
And listen, we're not going to even do it in a segment. Hell, it's going to take a series of podcasts to dissect that, right? Because
again, yeah, I mean, it's something I'm not even. Yeah, I'm not even comfortable talking about it myself.
And listen, I'm not trying to be a genius here. I know a little, obviously, because I just I know a little bit, but I'm not an expert. I don't know what the hell's going on in Cuba. Or I'm not there. I'm not boots on the ground to tell you, yep, this is what's going on, and it started with the Fidel Castro regime, and then his brother, and then you know now the president. And listen. A lot of things have gone wrong in Cuba. And I think it took COVID-19 to really kind of shine the light on it and really bring those issues to a forefront. And that's what you're seeing right now. And it's sad because Cuba is such a beautiful nation. It really is. It's a beautiful nation with a lot of great architecture, great history, great tradition.
Resources.
Great resources. And it's sad that they've been ravaged by such turmoil for the last 70, 75 years. And every U.S. president since Eisenhower has failed that nation. They really have. I mean, literally has failed that nation because
the only one who
embargoes, poor, Obama didn't necessarily.
He's the only one who like doesn't get an F in my book. He's the only one.
Yeah. But he gets a D.
Yeah. C minus.
Okay. I mean, listen, no, I mean, yeah, I, Okay, I'll give him a C. He at least tried. He at least tried, and he didn't pay lip service to trying. He actually did try.
The wild thing to me about that whole thing, and this is like, it's going to come across as kind of like arrogant and like, who the heck are you to say this? But like, the wild thing to me is that there's so many like Cubans in Florida who hate Obama because they think he's socialist. And like,
don't get me started.
And he was,
by far the friendliest president
to the Cubans that we've had.
Josh, you did it. See, you.
I'm sorry. I had to go there, man. Let me talk about her. Those people are confusing to me. They're so confusing to me.
Let me talk about our dear friends, the Cubans in Florida, because when you're dissecting Cubans, right, you obviously like all Latin America, like all races and nationalities, they're not monoliths, right?
Right. Different streams of thought.
People have different subsets, different cultures, within cultures, different opinions, et cetera. I will say this. Our Cuban friends in South Florida are very interesting, very interesting. They are the biggest group of people that annoys me in this country right now. Because for decades, right? For decades, these are the same people who have supported some of the most right-wing governments this nation could have seen. Avid supporters of Bush, avid supporters of Trump, right?
Trump, who, you know, Trump, who's a person who put, was it 280, something like what he did for relations with Cuba, like he said it back like two decades.
So the fact that
240 sanctions, over 240 sanctions.
And the fact that these individuals, right, these individuals, these Cubans in South Florida who come here and play such a vital, integral role politics in this country, they come here and have such disgusting right-wing views, right? They're not a friend of minority communities across. Like, Cubans are very racist. A lot of these Cubans in South Florida are very racist and are very destructive to a lot of the causes that you and I both believe in. And these Cubans, they play such a vital role in the politics in this country. And for them to just have such an adversarial relationship with the causes that you and I both believe in, it's so disgusting. But then it's like, I don't fucking get these people. You're right. I don't get them. Like, they have such a very spotty record on conservatism in this country. And then, but then with this going on in Cuba, they're at the front lines of all these protests and, oh, stand with us, unite with Cuba. They want black people to unite with them, but yet they don't support Black Lives Matter. They don't support any issues and any movements that help with race relations and equity in the black community at all. What are these, like, what is, listen, for a long time, I've always wondered what is, like, I would literally love to, like, dissect the brains of some of these Cubans in South Florida and really, like, pick their brains and see what the fuck they're actually thinking, because it doesn't even make sense to me.
This is what I think it is. So right now, it's a communist state that is under authoritarian leadership. And I think socialism and communism gets confused all the time. So my thinking is that they see an authoritarian in power. They see a country that is impoverished and is just heavily sanctioned and is just not doing well economically and is basically on the brink of collapsing. And they say, well, hey, we're a communist state. It's got to be because of that. I think it's a very surface level understanding of what's going on.
It's a surface level understanding, but then also they support a party that is actively conspiring to keep Cuba in the situation that they're in.
That's the confusing part to me.
And yes. Right. Like, you can't be that dumb. Like, they're literally, your support of the Republican Party is enabling Cuba to stay in the position that it's in, but yet you say you want change for Cuba.
And the one guy you hated the most is the one guy who doesn't get an F on relationships with freeing your nation, but take
Obama out of it, right? Because he's black and we can't like him. So yeah, there goes that. But, you know, take Cuba out of it, right?
Yeah.
You take Obama out of it, I should say. Like, you conspire on all these progressive issues. You support a party that enables Cuba to be in the position that you're in, but yet you say you want liberation and freedom from Cuba. You have a very surface level understanding of what actual communism is and the layers and subsets of it.
Yeah.
Right. But then you come to this country, you drape yourself in a Cuban flag and an American flag, say America is this beacon and city on a hill, this shining example of democracy, yet America is the chief the chief culprit in many of the issues that is occurring with Cuba. So you're literally taking losses all across the board. I literally don't understand these people.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a few years ago, like when I first got into politics and I got into Cuba, like my whole thing was kind of like, well, they live it. They know it. So I'm not going to sit here and tell them what's going on in their country. And that kind of changed for me when I started realizing like, oh, well, there's like Americans who don't understand what's going on in America.
There's a lot of people that don't.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just kind of chalk it up to that one. It's one of those things where it's like I said, I think socialism, just like, you know, how the Republicans use it as a buzzword, I think it hits hard with Cubans because they hear socialism or communism. They go, oh, well, that's the way our government is now. That's the reason why.
AOC, socialism. Oh, okay. She's Fidel Jr. Okay. So right. We can't like her.
And to be honest with you, I mean, there are Cubans in South Florida. It's not as much, but there are Cubans as well who, like, I've seen like counter protests to Cuban protests where, like, I've seen videos of Cubans arguing with each other, like, this is not social, that's not social, like trying to like plead mm-hmm. with their right wing, you know, fellow yeah. Cubans that like, you don't know what socialism is. Like, they're not like, I've seen Biden supporters of Cuban Biden supporters say that type of stuff. So yeah, I mean, like I said, that's why I try my best to stay out of it, just for the simple fact that I'm, like I said, I don't know what it's like being in Cuba. You know, there is something to the fact that it is an authoritarian state. And while it's an authoritarian state, it is under communist rule. So I do get I do understand why someone would associate communism with the fact that this is why we are where we're at. But it's also kind of like weird where it's like, well, if you're Cuban, you should kind of know the history of your country and how you got there and who has sanctions on your country. Like, there's so many Cubans. Like, it's just mind boggling. There's so many Cubans who love Donald Trump. And this dude dropped over, again, 240 sanctions on you. To limit your country from thriving economically.
Yeah.
Like that's, yeah. Like, not one.
Like, chief responsibility for many of the issues going on in Cuba. And again, that's not wiping the slate of the Castro regime and the communist regime and saying that they don't hold some responsibility. Well, listen, they're all responsible. And Cuba is an amalgamation of a lot of the issues that plague America and American foreign policy. And it has to be said. It literally has to be said. And it's crazy that COVID has kind of shined the light and has enhanced this to the forefront, because these issues have always existed in Cuba now, but now right. It's like it's coming to the forefront. Now, obviously, it took a pandemic to really bring these things to light, or not as bring it to light like we didn't know, like basically shine a light on these things and say, OK, this is a problem in Cuba. You have food shortages. You have people that can't get the vaccine. Remember that thing we talked about earlier about, you know, billionaires having more of a, you know, that thing? Yeah. So that's still going on in Cuba as well. You know, obviously you have the communist regime. You have a failure to protect their people, or at least from their perspective, a failure. Now, of course, the Cuban government is going to say that this is all deployed by the U.S. government to basically overthrow and undermine their regime, which could essentially be true. I mean, listen, America getting involved in other countries. Come on, that never happens, Josh. But yeah, it's part of the deal here. And listen, I just, a lot of stuff has been written about Cuba over the last couple of weeks. And you know, I implore everybody to kind of do your research on Cuba if you're interested and see what's going on out there. Listen, we're not experts. I'm not going to sit here. I know a little bit, obviously, because my mom.
Same.
And family members, obviously, they live in Florida and they have a lot of Cuban friends, and we have a lot of family friends that are Cuban. So I'm a little bit privy to the topic more so than your average person, but it's a lot. It's a lot, and it's deep. And I mean, anything involving geopolitical issues is deep, right? It isn't black or white. It's a lot of nuance to it. And you have to have these conversations with an educated brush. And you do disservice to it if you don't.
Authoritarianism and communism don't go hand in hand. They are two separate things. Just because you're a communist doesn't mean that you're authoritarian. It just so happened that in Cuba, that's how they control the government. I think a lot of people don't understand that as well. They hear communism and they automatically think, oh, authoritarianism, dictatorship. And, no, that's not the case.
And America, please don't sit on your high horse and lecture other countries on what they should do, because currently we live in the richest country in the world and we have crime spiking all over this nation. We have homelessness right. crisis. We have the middle class that's being eroded by the day. So please don't preach from your glass house, from your very, very shiny glass house.
Yeah.
Please don't.
I agree.
Because, yeah, we may not be Cuba, but
right.
we're not nearly the nation that we should be when you consider the fact that we have more wealth and a huge wealth disparity in this country.
Right.
For sure. So,
yep.
Well, listen, I wanted to touch a little bit on the topic of Cuba. Listen, there's going to be more to come and more things will happen over the next couple of weeks. Hopefully, hopefully, maybe not hopefully, depending on your perspective on it. But Cuba's not going to go away from the national conversation. It's going to exist and it's going to keep being a thing. And I think that what COVID has done is it's moved Cuba and the issues that are going on in Cuba to kind of, maybe not the front of the line, but at least in the conversation of important foreign policy issues that I think the Biden administration is going to have to get reined in, fairly quickly. And you're absolutely right. Do something about it. With the stroke of a pen, you can make changes and
you can lift all those. You just reverse those Trump sanctions. But
Josh, Facebook is killing us. That's the real enemy. So it's
killing us. Something about it. But listen, they can't.
It's killing Cubans too. Facebook is killing Cubans. Not hunger.
There's other things that Cuba has to take care of itself too. Don't get me wrong, but do your part. Just do your part. And I have no problem with you, Joe, on this issue.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I 100% agree with you, man. 100% agree with you. All right, man. I think we got through it all. Eventful show.
It was. You went through a lot.
I went through a lot.
We did.
Bezos in space. Bezos cutting my laptop's battery power off.
1,000%.
Yeah, a lot. Giannis, bags. A lot on this episode, man. Before you go, please tell the listeners what's in your bag and see what I did there.
Nice.
What's in your bag and plug all your podcasts and everything that you got going on.
So Dime with Josh Rodriguez, NBA podcast dropping weekly. Right now you can catch our mock draft episode for the NBA draft this Thursday. Just type in the Dime with Josh Rodriguez wherever you listen to your podcast.
Yeah, for sure. Great episode, man. I meant to tell you that too.
Oh, thank you, man.
Listen, I'm not through with it yet. I'm like halfway through, but
it's a long one.
Dope.
It's a long one.
Dope show.
Thank you.
No, if you guys want an in-depth breakdown of the draft, the NBA draft. I'm less into the NBA draft than I mean the NFL draft. I'm gonna get to it. I mean, I watch all seven rounds. The NBA draft is a little. I mean, I know the players. I know them. Obviously, I'm a huge college basketball fan, but. Yeah, I can maybe get through maybe the first round of the NBA draft, and then it's like, no. Unless there's players that I like, oh man, I can't believe this guy's still on the board. He's dope, or wow, he's cold, and yeah. So, but this is going to be a very deep draft. I think this is one. It has a chance to be one of those generational type drafts. I really believe that. About five or seven guys on here that really have a chance to. Not just be good players, but great players, impact players right away too. So yeah, it's going to be a good draft for sure. So yeah, Josh has got you covered on the Dime on that. So go make sure you go check it out. You guys know about me, Manny Brown. I am the host of this great show. The Baseball Podcast is sadly still on hiatus for a little bit until we figure some things out. But, who knows? Maybe there might be some news to share in the near future on that one. But until then, I got you covered on MLB Bro. So basically check it out every week. I'm working on some different segments. So debatables, my two cents, a couple of different things that I got in the works. So just make sure you're checking it out. MLBBro.com, just as it sounds, MLBBro.com. Go check that out. Go follow everyone that works on the site. It's a really dope site. I really do think we're doing some really dope things. Just go check it out. Support the work. And if you're a fan of MLB and you're a fan of black baseball players and black and brown baseball players, I should say, definitely go check that out. It's a good cause. It's a good thing. And I really think we're doing something really dope there. But yeah, definitely go follow this show. Thank you for supporting. Thank you for subscribing, whether you're subscribing on YouTube, subscribing on Apple, Spotify, et cetera. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for following and supporting the show. Without you guys, there is no show. So definitely got to say that. As always, you can follow me right there at the Manuel Brown on Instagram, Twitter, et cetera, Facebook, Manny Brown or Manuel Brown. Yeah, check it out. Snapchat, MannyBro15. I'm everywhere. So except TikTok. Maybe. We'll see. Before the year's over. Maybe. I might do. Who knows? We've reached a weird part of the schedule where it's like baseball's dog days, NFL training camps. You know, we might have a TikTok episode in stored in the next couple of weeks. Who knows? You know, we'll see.
We'll see.
Nah, but definitely go check it out. Go support. Go follow me on all social media platforms. Go follow the show at AGS Pod on Twitter, AGS Podcast on Instagram, and Any Given Sunday on Facebook. All right. I am done blabbering. It is hot. The heat wave has returned. A slight heat wave has returned to the Pacific Northwest. So I'm sweating, as you can see, for those of you on the YouTube. Oh yeah, make sure you go subscribe to the YouTube channel, Any Given Sunday Podcast on YouTube. Go make sure you subscribe so you get the live show, and then of course the podcast will be up later on in the evening. Yeah, that is it for Josh Rodriguez. I am Manny Brown. We are out of here. Peace, and salute to Jeff Bezos for going to space and saving us all.
Oh God, Jeff Bezos.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.